Get that right there.
I get
there.
That.
Perfect timing.
All right. All right. Well, there you go. I did it.
Okay. So congratulations.
Exactly. So now what should we talk about? All right. Well, have a great night, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
All right. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. The news is sponsored by Lindeman Chimney Company. It is 7 o'clock. Feels so weird. It's 7 o'clock. Here's Rob Martyr.
It is mostly sunny in 67 at O'Hare. Chicago police announced murder charges today against 22-year-old Diego Uribe and his girlfriend, 19-year-old Jafeth Ramos. The two are accused of murdering a family of six in Gage Park in February. CPD Chief of Detectives Eugene Roy.
The break in the case came yesterday when detectives learned that DNA evidence recovered at the scene linked Diego Uribe to the scene. Additionally, cell phone records also link Uribe to the scene.
Police say it was a robbery gone bad. Uribe is a cousin of one of the victims. Former U.S. House Speaker Dennis Hastert's been ordered by a judge to report to prison by June 22nd to begin serving a 15-month sentence in his hush money case. Hastert pleaded guilty to violating banking laws while seeking to pay over $3 million to someone he sexually molested during his time as a teacher. As U.S. intelligence officials investigate the backgrounds of the pilots and crew of Egypt Air Flight 804, authorities are saying the disappearance of the plane remains a mystery. The aircraft carrying 66 people from Paris to Cairo vanished from radar shortly after entering Egyptian airspace around 3 o'clock this morning, Egypt time. FBI Director James Comey says no claim of responsibility has been made.
I don't know that we're going to be sending anybody anywhere until we have a better sense of what's going on. But in an incident like this, we always assist to try and understand, do we have any information in any of our holdings that would be useful to our partners in Egypt, to our partners in France?
Egyptian and Greek planes and vessels are searching an area of the Mediterranean where it's believed the airliner crashed. According to federal investigation, PGA star Phil Mickelson paid off a debt to professional gambler William Walters with $931,000 that was obtained from insider trading back in 2012. Mickelson won't face charges, but the Securities and Exchange Commission and federal prosecutor announced an indictment today against Walters, who was a former board member of a firm where he allegedly obtained inside information. Mickels agreed to repay the money he made off that single trade. State lawmakers are rolling the dice one more time in a last-minute push to legalize daily fantasy sports betting. We get more from WGN's Kim Gordon.
Even though Attorney General Lisa Madigan said in December that betting through sites like DraftKings and FanDuel is illegal, the Senate approved a bill today. The measure would impose taxes and licensing fees and call on the Illinois Gaming Board to oversee the sites. Anyone under 21 would also be barred from playing. The bill now heads to the House. Kim Gordon, WGN News.
And CBS News says veteran 60 Minutes correspondent Morley Safers died a week after announcing his retirement. The 84-year-old started with the program in 1970. We'll check sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
When it comes to working for myself, the satisfaction of being my own boss is its own reward. But sometimes it's even nicer when I get a reward I can actually put in my wallet.
Now at Fifth Third Bank, you can get instant appreciation for running your own business. Just open a business checking account with qualifying activities and you'll get $400.
Being my own boss is a journey. And each day brings challenges, rewards, and ultimately personal fulfillment. And I admit, I like that personal fulfillment even better when it comes in the form of cash.
It's time all your hard work got noticed. Just stop into your nearest Fifth Third Banking Center to open your business checking account today. They say do what you love and the money will follow. Turns out that advice is true, and in this case, to the tune of $400. From the bank that's curious about finding ways to help your business succeed, Fifth Third Bank. Visit 53.com/400 for details on qualifying activity requirements, which must be met within 60 days of account opening. New business checking account must be opened with a $50 minimum deposit between 411 and 61716, member FDIC.
Hi, it's Steve Cochran for Siding One Windows, One Windows. I had them put in my home a winter ago, and I got to tell you, second winter in a row where I'm nice and warm all winter long, and last summer I was cool when I needed to be cool. That's just the quality work that Siding One Windows, One does. One of the greatest things about them was they cleaned up after themselves. You could barely tell that they were there. Right now, get great spring pricings, get a quote, and find out what I found out. It's siding-one.com for me, 800-929-9275.
929-9275.
Stop yawn talking and start sleeping happy during Mattress Firm's Memorial Day sale. Be the first to experience the all-new Custom Collection with a unique design for superior performance crafted exclusively for Mattress Firm, featuring luxury lines from Beautyrest, Tempur-Pedic, and Serta 2. And for a limited time, purchase any Custom Collection mattress and you'll get up to three free gifts, including a pillow, a bed frame, and delivery up to a $300 value, and it's free. Look, nothing's more important than sleep, and what you sleep on really matters, so you can stifle those yawns or stop the yawn talking. Oh, it all could be avoided with a good night's sleep on the right mattress. Did you know May is Better Sleep Month? Right now, ask yourself, how are you lining up? If you're struggling through the day, let your Mattress Firm help you sleep happy tonight, and there's one near you. Mattress Firm wants you to shop with confidence, knowing you're getting the lowest price. If you happen to find the same or comparable mattress sets for less than the displayed or advertised price, just bring in the advertisement, and they'll beat the price by 10% or it's free. Up to 100 days after purchase as well. Again, Mattress Firm. Save money. Sleep happy.
WGN Sports Baseball this afternoon in Milwaukee. The Brewers beat the Cubs 5-3. Just about ready to get underway on the south side. It's Game 3 between the Astros and the White Sox. Western Conference Final, Game 3 between the Blues and Sharks in San Jose. The series is tied at a game apiece as the NHL playoffs continue tonight. NBA playoffs tonight. Cleveland Cavaliers have a 1-0 series lead over the Toronto Raptors. Eastern Conference Final, Game 2 in Cleveland gets underway in just about a half an hour. Taking a look at the traffic situation right now on the inbound Edens, 40 minutes Lake Cook Road to the junction, 20 minutes back out. Inbound Kennedy, an hour from O'Hare to downtown, only 30 minutes back out to the airport. Outbound Eisenhower, 55 from Thorndale to the old post office, 40 minutes inbound. Stevenson, 50 minutes between Lakeshore Drive and 355. And the Dan Ryan, 20 minutes in both directions between 95th and the Burn Circle. Traffic is brought to you by Cabela's. Don't miss Cabela's Memorial Day sale and kick off the summer with huge savings like 50% off Cabela's deluxe flotation vest and 20% off select Keen footwear. Plus, save big at their Beretta firearm sales event in Hoffman Estates or Hammond and Cabela's.com. Now the forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Tonight, mainly clear, cool, lows of near 40 inland, 44 downtown. Friday and Friday night becoming partly cloudy, seasonable temperatures. Lake breezes continue, a high Friday of 71 inland, but low to mid-60s area beaches, a low Friday night to 44. And Saturday, mostly sunny, slow warming continues, a high of 75, mid to upper 60s along the lake. Right now at O'Hare, it is 67, Midway 66, Palatine 65, 59 at Chicago's lakefront. The barometer is falling. Next news at 7:30 or when news breaks and at WGNradio.com. I'm Rob Martier on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Tonight on the download, Roots rocker Robbie Fulk, Chicago Art Expo president and director Tony Carman, and Chicago Tribune theater critic Chris Jones. And now, here's your host, a man who is on the new Cherry Coke diet, Justin Kaufman.
I don't know if it's as much a diet as it is delicious. I found the, after a year's time here, Pete, I found the Chicago Tribune Tower vending machine. And I've had 12 Cherry Coke today. Decided who needs nutrients. Just drink the Cherry Cokes.
That'll do it.
I'll bet if I just drank Cherry Coke for 2 weeks straight, no other food. That's all I drank. Like, that's what I had, like 10 of them a day.
This is like your Morgan Spurlock moment.
Right. I would lose 20 pounds. I'd be ready. Have a beach bod. I'd be ready.
I'm doing this this Orange Theory fitness.
Yeah, right. Tell us about that.
You know, it's like a 1 hour really hardcore workout. You do 30 minutes on a treadmill, and then you do 30 minutes weights.
Ooh.
But the part that I always hate about it is there's a coach who kind of guides you through everything.
I hate coaches.
And they have, you know, the jams, you know, a lot of the jams playing right in the background. And
can you bring your own headphones? Or you got it? No.
No, because the coach kind of guides you, yeah.
That's terrible.
But there's one who always talks about, you know, going to have a beach bod coming up. And it always it makes me laugh.
Come on, Zimmerman.
Yeah, get that beach.
We gotta get that beach bod for when you're down with the lake water with the lake levels. They're so high this year.
I think the last time I took my shirt off in public in Chicago was like 1982, or
to put out a fire. Right? You're like, I have to take the shirt off. Right. I know. Like, I've always wanted to be one of those guys who like rollerblades with his shirt in his pocket. Like, I've always dreamt of being one of those guys, like right down Michigan Avenue, like it's Venice Beach. But I I'm the same way. That's not going to work, right? Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on WGN Radio with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We have a great show lined up. We got a little bit of news. We got a little bit of arts and culture, a little commentary, some presidential trivia, and Robbie Foulkes, live music. What else could, I mean, what a great show tonight. Tonight's a great example of a show all about Chicago. We're going to first talk about a story that is so confusing to me. And we haven't talked about it much on the show, about higher ed funding here in Illinois. This has been something where you get newspaper articles, you get press releases, you get tweets, everything about what's being funded, what's not. MAP grants, Illinois. One group says that the state of Illinois is the worst state in the nation when it comes to higher education funding. We have actually cut back, by their number count, 78% since 2008. That's over $5,000 per student. And when you hear numbers like that, it starts to make a little bit more sense why people are getting bent out of shape about whether or not they're going to get their MAP grants. And obviously MAP grants is in the news again, because I guess that big meeting that was the leader meeting, what came out of it was a deal. Speaker of the House Mike Madigan said, all right, we'll give you X. And Bruce Rauner said, we'll give you Y. And Speaker Madigan's like, well, I'm going to pass MAP grants out of, you know, the House, because I can do that, because whatever I say goes. And we'll get it worked out with the Senate, and we'll get it on your desk, and you'll sign it. Remains to be seen if that's going to happen, but the House did pass MAP grant funding, which essentially just, for lower-income students, gives them a grant. This is, you know, $5,000 or so. I mean, anything from $2,000 to $5,000, so it's important, you know. Also, with that number, tuition in the state of Illinois has gone up since 2010, I think it is, about 27%. So you get the idea that it just doesn't seem like the state of Illinois wants kids in this state to go to college. Like, maybe there's a nefarious plan. If they don't go to college, maybe they'll, you know, build the Lucas Museum. I don't, I'm not sure what that is, but obviously, you know, students don't have much of a choice. The choice is to either take on student loans and then therefore start their careers in debt, which is what we're seeing play out in nationally right now for a millennial generation that did that, or skip school altogether. It seems like this would be a great grand nugget for politics to stick their flag in and say, well, I did this, as a la Bernie Sanders, which is what he's talking about. So anyway, we'll talk about that coming up on the show right after the news at 7:30 tonight as well. Robbie Foulkes in studio. How exciting. New record that was just put out in April called Upland Stories. Really talks about sort of the area of Upland, which I guess is, I'm not very familiar with the South, but it's the sort of northern part of the South. And he writes, a lot of his songs are based on, or a few of his songs on the record are based on Alabama during the Depression, like 1930s. So I'm interested in talking about that. I'm not that familiar with it, but I'm intrigued. I'm curious about what he learns as a songwriter from, you know, he seems like he's almost a researcher or a journalist in creating, you know, he goes and researches things before he actually writes songs about them. So we'll talk with Robbie. And he's also going to bring his guitar, and we'll hear some of the new stuff as well. Also coming up at 9 o'clock, Tony Carman's going to be here, director and president of the Art Expo. This is great because we've had a lot of people on from the contemporary art world, you know, and every time we've had conversations about art and Chicago, they always say, you know what, you should talk to Tony Carman. You should talk to Tony because what he's doing with the Art Expo to bring it to not only Chicago, but to present it in a way that it becomes the convention for the art world in America. Right now there's Basel in Miami, which is a big deal. But for contemporary art and artists around the world, galleries and exhibitors, you know, he's making a play to make Chicago the center of it. So we'll talk today. They announced which galleries would be presenting. So we'll talk with Tony a little bit later. He's actually at that. I think they're having that presentation now. Also tonight, Chris Jones will be here, the chief Chicago Tribune critic, theater critic. He had a great piece in the Sunday paper, a column that essentially reviewed the Barack Obama show. President Barack Obama, is he funny? What makes him tick? And he has been a very funny president. But Chris goes deeper into where his comedy lies and how he'll be judged against other presidents and such. So we'll talk with Chris about that. And plus, some big theater news with Steppenwolf turning 40, which is a big story, and some other things as well. Lorraine Hansberry's birthday. Yeah. And Professor Al Jeanie's back tonight. We're going to talk to him about presidential trivia. This is sort of his fun thing. This is fun. I'm excited. You know, we're going to talk about who, let me try one on you, Pete. Which president had the most children?
Harding?
That's a great guess, because I mean, Tyler, President Tyler, 14 children. Wow. Who was the only president to be unmarried? We should just, you know, we should
Woodrow
do,
Wilson?
Close. President Buchanan, so not close. maybe we should do that. Maybe we could do, like, we should have thought ahead on this. I guess we're still ahead of the time because Al's later in the show, but we should have done it where we just quizzed people at home and gave them some of those pizzas that we want to give away. You know?
Yeah. Well,
next time.
You know what? Al is a font.
Yeah.
Is that right? A font? Font?
He's definitely a font. I'll give him that.
A font of history knowledge. He could come in down the road and do another session because it's his presidential trivia seems to be unending.
It's great.
Unending.
And these are so fun. What's the most common religion in the White House, in the history of the White House?
Protestant?
No. Episcopalian.
Oh, yeah.
12 presidents. Washington, Madison, Monroe, Van Buren, Harrison, Tyler, Zachary Taylor, Pierce, Arthur, FDR, Ford, George Bush Sr., and a little asterisk, George Bush Jr., G-Dub, was Methodist.
Hmm. Oh. Really?
Yeah. So that coming up a little bit later in the program.
Fun.
Yeah, it's fun, right? News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, it's time for the carryout. Stay with us. All right, welcome to The Download here. We might as well start tonight like we do every night with the carryout. This, of course, is our nightly segment where I read the newspapers so you at home don't have to. Here are today's top stories. A new study out says Chicago is losing population. We're the only major city to lose people, not gain them. And it looks like Houston needs about a decade to pass us as the third largest city in the country. Which, you know what? They can have it. Third largest isn't suiting us very well. Does Houston get systemic violence, inequality, crushing debt, and crumbling infrastructure when they move up? Like a swap? What do we get? Galveston? I'll take it. Galveston sounds nice. Egypt Air Flight 804 supposedly went down in the Mediterranean last night. All 66 passengers are feared dead. Officials spotted debris in the sea but say it's not from Flight 804. Wait, how much debris is there in the water? I mean, come on, who gets confused about plane debris? Is that a wing? Oh, no, it's just garbage. Sorry, it's just garbage. Also, politicians have quickly lined up to say that Egypt Air Flight is exactly why we have long lines at the airports. For our safety. They're being diligent. Really? So those two-hour security lines are about terrorism? Oh, okay, because yesterday I thought it was about not enough people signing up for the pre-check. Or the day before you said it was all about how we're bringing too much carry-on luggage. And the day before that, it was how we weren't emptying our pockets quick enough. So which one is it? Just go ahead and make up your mind. Oklahoma lawmakers have made abortions a felony in the state of Oklahoma. This, of course, will be challenged because the federal law permits abortion. But so everyone knows, this is something that is done every other year to try and get up to the Supreme Court to challenge the law. That's all it is. And with Donald Trump, it could happen.
states are going to start putting some really radical stuff out there. Like, if I were a state lawmaker, I'd write a law that outlaws state lawmakers, right? Because exactly what do they do again? Don't know. Trib CEO Michael Farrow not only told Gannett Publishing to buzz off with their hostile takeover bid, but today he told insiders that he was going to bid on Gannett. You think you're rich? I'll show you rich. Jeeves, get my Avengers plane. That's all Michael Farrow needs now to be Batman. Or, you know what, he should just come up with a new superhero. What could he be called? I know. Let's call him Splash. A new poll says that 90% of Native Americans don't care about the football team in Washington, D.C., using the word Redskins. When reached for comments, white liberal hipsters were like, well, we know what's offensive for everybody, okay? It's offensive. Stop. And GMOs kill baby seals. Just stop. Uber rolled out their first self-driving car in Pittsburgh today. No word if the self-driving car had bottles of water, chocolates, and judged you when you didn't tip. Also, I wonder what happens when the GPS doesn't work. Excuse me, can you take me through Lower Wacker?
And don't, no, does not compute, self-destruct.
Donald Trump has zeroed in on his campaign target. Not Hillary, Bill Clinton. He's going after President Clinton's past, which we all know about. It's somewhat humorous to see dirty politics coming from the Trump campaign. Trump calling out Bill Clinton is like a canker sore calling out a cold sore. Similar, both sores. In weather, so nice today. Little chilly, but nice. In sports, the Cubs lost today to the Brewers 5-3. The Brew Crew took 2 of 3 from the NL Central leading Cubbies. No matter, the Cubs are still 7 games up. One small rumor floated has Brewers slugger Ryan Braun in the Cubs' sights. I just hope he brings the Ryan Braun steakhouses to Wrigleyville. Because remember, after he got busted for PEDs, they took his name off Wisconsin restaurants faster than the Brewers mascot slides down that beer slide. It's like, this used to be a Ryan Braun steakhouse. I can see the stenciling. Nope, it's a Bennigan's. It's now a Bennigan's. The Sox have already lost the series against the Astros, but they hope to grab 1 game from them, the second worst team in the AL, by the way. Chris Sale tonight goes for win number 9. Matt Leto stunk it up again last night, but have no fear. ESPN says the Sox could be in the running for an ace like Sonny Gray in Oakland. What a complex name, Sonny Gray. He'd fit in great here in Chicago. The Warriors won big last night, crushing the Thunder by over 30 points because, you know, playoffs. Tonight, LeBron and the Cavs take on the Raptors. Okay. The NFL is giving back over $700,000 to the federal government for the quote-unquote paid patriotism. Remember this last year when it was revealed that the armed forces were paying top money to be able to advertise at NFL games? And the NFL kind of makes it seem like it's volunteer or charity, that they just do it because they love the country. No, the government was paying them. So now they gave all the money back because they really want to prove, hey, we love this country. Please, we're the NFL. We love it. And finally, Chicago City Council voted to drop the age limit on tattoos from 21 to 18. So now when you drink too many wine coolers, it's legal to get a butterfly on your ankle or a barbed wire around your bicep or a cool Japanese lettering on your lower back. And since you got the tattoo when you were 18, you'll have a few extra years to regret it. Well, that's the carryout for May 19th, 2016. Hey, we're now serving custard. I mean, it's hot custard, but we promise it's going to be the new rage. Coming up, we're going to talk about the politics behind higher education funding. That's coming up right after the news here on The Download on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martyr, how are you, my man?
I am doing well. How about you?
I'm good. I'm excited about tonight. It's going to be a fun night. We got
Absolutely.
A lot of good stuff.
That's been a string of good shows. I mean, we've managed to put together a few good games.
I know, right?
You know,
take it one day at a time. You know, try to get out there, put one foot in front of the other. I wish it was. I mean, Cubs already played today, so we're already off the news cycle. But I want to talk about the Cubs yesterday in extra innings and the fun they were having. Every batter, they were moving players defensively around the
Yeah, didn't Bryant play like 15 positions inside of like a half an inning?
He had to borrow Javi Baez's glove because his first base glove was not broken in. And then Joe Maddon said, which I thought was great, he's like, well, we didn't have a lot of options at that point because we couldn't switch up left and right pitchers and things. So we just wanted to give him a different vibe, the batter. So when they come up like, why is he playing first? Oh, strike three. Oh, I didn't even see that. Like,
hey, man, can't do that.
Why is Javi Baez? Oh, strike two. No, these guys, they confuse me so. I came all the way to the major leagues and I can't figure this out.
Maddon and his mysterious ways.
Anyway, we didn't get a chance to talk about that. That was crazy.
Do we have a nickname for Maddon, by the way?
We got to get one, right? Well, he's got, what is it, the Mad Genius or something like that?
I'm just going to call him Obi-Wan.
I'll save it. We will have to do Maddon.
We'll do more.
Way down the line, right?
Yeah.
We got to start doing White Sox, too. I feel like we're already six Cubs into no White Sox. So I'm already reaching out to some Sox fans to come in.
We can do that.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Looking forward to the show. Before we get to 8 o'clock, which is great, I can't wait. Robbie Folks is going to be here. He's bringing his guitar, which is great. This is an issue we haven't really talked about at any length here on the download. Higher education and state funding. It's been a big issue in Springfield the last couple months. We've seen it with Chicago State University brought to the brink due to the lack of promised state funding. But the issue of funding higher ed isn't just about institutions, but it's also about students. The Illinois House passed funding this week for MAP grants, which is really funding for low-income students. It's not clear if the governor's going to sign the bill. We kind of talked about that right before the news. And this is all on the heels of a new report from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities that says Illinois is the worst state in the union when it comes to funding higher education. Since 2008, state funding for colleges and universities, it's been cut by 78%, which is over $5,000 per student. With the current state of the budget, advocates are worried this situation is just going to get worse. And I have to tend to agree with them in this one, right? So what will middle to low income students have to do to go to college? That's right, go into debt. Or maybe skip it altogether. Not a great proposition for Illinois students and their families. So what can be done? David Lloyd is the director of the Fiscal Policy Center at Voices for Illinois Children, and he joins me on the line now. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Justin.
So let me start right away with the news of the week. MAP grant funding passes the House. What's your thought on that? Does it look like we're finally going to get something done on MAP grants?
We certainly hope that MAP grants are fully funded because they're so important for low-income students in Illinois. And, you know, without MAP grant funding for most of this year, we saw deep uncertainty in students about whether they could even continue to be enrolled. And, you know, many students didn't return for the, for the semester, for the second semester this year. And, you know, when we don't fund MAP grants, which helps students attend college, we really put college further and further out of risk and put their entire futures in jeopardy.
Hmm. All right, well, let's talk about the overall. I mean, this report from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities says Illinois is the worst state in the union when it comes to funding higher education. Why is that? Why has the state of Illinois gone this way? Because it's actually gone from the last 7 or 8 years, so it's been different political parties. Why is the state sort of continually defunding higher education?
Yeah, you know, the vast majority of the defunding that's occurred has occurred this year, and it's because the state didn't have a budget and now, just a couple weeks ago, passed emergency funding that was only about 30% of what was funded last year. So you've seen this enormous cut, this school year to higher education in Illinois. And, you know, that puts us at the very bottom of all states in terms of, you know, making these core investments in our future. And, you know, it's really kind of insane that we're doing this. And, you know, because these are the economic engines for our state. And, you know, to just pull out the rug from under our colleges and universities, it really does make the future much bleaker here in Illinois.
David, can you, I mean, obviously we've seen impacts of not having a state budget in place when it comes to higher education funding. But is this just a big game of political chicken? I mean, we've seen this over and over and over between the governor and the speaker about funding not just higher education, but you know, high schools and public schools and the like. I mean, is this something that, you know, taxpayers and Illinois residents can expect will be resolved once a budget's in place?
If the lawmakers and the governor enact a budget, much of this will be resolved because, you know, the state hasn't had a budget for all of this year. But there also is the very important issue of, the state allowed income tax rates to automatically go down by 25% last year. And so, the state has lost about $5 billion in revenue each year. And, the last year's higher education budget in the state was only $1.9 billion. So it was, roughly 40% of, what the total revenue loss. So even if you cut out all of higher ed funding, you wouldn't solve the problem that's been created. So, the lawmakers and the governor need to come together, and they need to come together on revenue and raise the resources that we need to make these critical investments.
Well, let's talk about, there's, like I mentioned at the top, it's institutions and it's students. From the institution side, we've seen a lot with mid-level universities and colleges. Like I mentioned, Chicago State, Northeastern Illinois University here in Chicago also went through a lot of trouble. But let's talk about what the impact is on some of the bigger institutions as well, the University of Illinois, some of the others that you don't hear about necessarily in the news every day.
Sure. The University of Illinois, which is, the biggest and in many ways the strongest of the universities, it has eliminated about 150 positions so far this school year. And you also see resignations of senior faculty are up this year by about 75%. So you're losing some of the top educators in our state are essentially leaving because they, they are either nearing retirement and thought, well, this is the time to go. Or others are just, simply, leaving the state. And, so you see these dramatic impacts and, you see students trying to decide, do you want to go to the University of Illinois if you're a high school senior, or do you want to go out of state? And all of a sudden, out of state seems, a lot more appealing than it might have previously because you don't know what things are going to look like next year.
Right.
And once these high school students, leave the state, they may never come back. We certainly hope they do, but, to have them, just leave Illinois is a huge hit, for the future of our state.
Well, let's talk about, what are students doing in the meantime? Is it really just a question of without school funding, without MAP grants, which we're seeing, but not everybody takes part in MAP grants. Are we seeing a move towards student loans? Are we seeing, students skipping college altogether? What are we seeing from students who have to make those decisions?
Yeah, certainly for low-income students without MAP grants, they have a couple choices. One choice is not to not to go to college because they feel like they simply can't afford it. Another choice is to take on more debt, and that debt obviously has to be repaid in the future. So, neither of those options is great, for students looking, looking towards the future and, becoming taxpayers and becoming productive citizens in the future. It's harmful for all students. And we will also see tuition increases, if these we're already seeing tuition increases if these funding cuts continue, and that will increase the amount that all students pay,
right?
Which is even middle class students. So that's obviously has a huge negative effect.
So are you optimistic? Are you optimistic over at Voices for Illinois Children that we'll see a budget deal done and that higher education funding will be in place by the end of the spring session?
I wish I could say I was really optimistic. Certainly this year so far has not led to great optimism. But we did see some progress in the past few weeks when they did pass roughly 30% of the higher education budget. So, you know, it's important that, you know, lawmakers and the governor continue that progress and continue talking. And people know what needs to be done in terms of, you know, raising the resources necessary. There's a bipartisan group that wants to do that. And, you know, they just have to, you know, invest in the long-term future of our state by making sure that we have the resources necessary make these critical investments.
David Lloyd is the director of the Fiscal Policy Center at Voices for Illinois Children. He joined me tonight. David, thanks for taking some time out. We appreciate it.
No, thanks so much.
If you've not been to the Garfield Park Conservatory, you should go. Saturday, Kathy and Judy would be a perfect time to go. That's such a beautiful place.
It's the best.
They also shot the movie with Vince Vaughn that Ron Howard did. The Dilemma. The Dilemma.
Which could be the title of any movie.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the point of that movie. But the there's a shot where he's hiding in the bushes in the Garfield Park Conservatory because he sees his friend's lady, you know, making time with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So he's hiding. And the joke is he gets, like, poison ivy.
Oh. Sounds great.
It's well thought out kind of arc on that. 708 says, here's a novel idea. Instead of college, join the Army and get the GI Bill. Okay. Then 217 gets more colorful. You might want to remind your communist guest that he is deliberately leaving out the correct option. The correct option is to join the military. Is that what people think? Is that am I guessing ages on that? Are people still, I'm interested, you know? I think other countries do that where there's a sort of a mandatory draft that you go in to serve your country. And then out of that, you're given some sort of, it's socialist, but you get, free college.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what we're trying to figure out is how do you bring these tuitions down? Could the government subsidize? Which I think it's so funny when I hear people say that. Right? The idea of joining the military to then get free college. Well, who's paying for that college? The government pays for that college. If that was sort of a mandatory thing, wouldn't the government be paying for college and then we would have state-run college, which would essentially be socialism, which is kind of what Bernie Sanders was talking about and everyone freaked out. But it is, And then 773 says, this is an interesting point, too. With as little as the world is now, I'd gladly pay over $300,000 for my children to go to college once their children lost for nothing. I see what he's saying. He's saying that you'd gladly pay a lot of money because war is futile. And what's the point of putting your kid in harm's way just to get free college? You'd gladly pay money so they wouldn't get in harm's way. It's kind of interesting. There's a lot of great stuff on here. I'm having good luck finding time to go to college after you leave the service and you have to support yourself because now you're grown and you have to find a job to pay your bills and figure out how you're going to get to college. Yeah, that's true. I just think it's interesting, you know. Let's go to Jamie on the line. Jamie, you got a thought on military and college? What's your thought?
Okay, well, here's the thing is that I went in 1984, I went into the military. I had no idea about this, but Dick Durbin for Illinois said, if you sit there and put 4 years of military service, then you get free tuition at any Illinois state college.
Right.
So it's not a federal thing. It's a Illinois thing.
Okay, so it's an Illinois thing. State, government, regardless, I mean, it's still government-sponsored. I'm more interested, though. Like,
no, it's not federally sponsored. It's Illinois-sponsored.
Right. I get it. I get the difference between the state and federal. But, what about the idea? You went through this. What about the idea of, someone who goes into the Army, comes out of the Army, and is given the GI Bill to go to college, but they're also grown and they got to figure out how to get a job and pay the bills and all the things to be able to live a life. How hard is it to go to school at night?
The GI Bill is something totally different from that. So if you have the GI Bill and you are in Illinois, then you are getting way more money to sit there to go to college, because not only do you get the GI Bill to sit there and pay for your mm-hmm. whatever, your book,
right,
your you sit there, you have a bigger advance on getting a college education.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you have free tuition. That is a free ride for 4 years. Plus, if you have the GI Bill, you can sit there and pay for your housing, your
I have a buddy.
Electric bills, all that stuff.
One of my great buddies, thanks, Jamie. One of my best friends did the GI Bill. He served in Iraq and he came back and did the GI Bill and he was able to go through school and get a career out of it. So it does work. Will, what's your thought on a GI Bill?
Oh, hey. Well, I'm actually, I was a combat veteran. I did the whole GI Bill. Not everybody needs to go to college. The world needs ditch diggers. I know people in my family that went to U of I and they're fine arts majors. They make nothing. They don't even use a degree. I did a vocational thing at my CDL and make $55,000 a year. Living the American dream.
There you go.
All right. But everybody thinks, oh, you got to go to college. You got to go to college. Yeah, put money away for college. And if your kid decides not to go to college, big deal. Let them go do something else.
Yeah, right. There you go. Thanks, Will. There are a lot of options. I mean, this conversation is a little bit wide. It's a little wide ranging. I do think, though, that there are more opportunities if you do go to college to be able to get a high paying job. If you don't go to college, you're in a position where maybe you're not. So, I mean, there's a lot of that. I mean, there's some great stuff going on text there. It's hard because it's coming in fast. A lot of texts that are coming in on this issue on both sides, because some people are saying, being able to do that for the GI Bill is great, to be able to, send your kids in there, that's great, but it's also very dangerous, and it may be more worth somebody's time to just put the money in it. So interesting conversation. We can talk more about it another time. We'll get your calls and texts in and talk about whether or not college is a good thing. I didn't think we would get any response on that, and we got it, so we can talk about it later. But we got to take a break. The news is coming up next, and then Robbie Folks is going to be here, and he brought his guitar. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Tony Carman's going to be here. He's the president and director of the Art Expo. We're going to talk about art, the contemporary art scene, also the convention that's coming. I mean, it's the fifth year of bringing it back. We'll talk with Tony about what it takes to put on a huge, essentially, conference, art conference here in Chicago, and try to make Chicago much more of an epicenter for the arts community in the country. Right now, that's kind of owned by Miami. Miami's got Basel, which is the big arts jam down there. Mm-hmm. So Chicago could be the epicenter, and Tony's trying to make that happen. So we'll talk with Tony Carman coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Also, Chris Jones from the Chicago Tribune will be here. We'll be talking about his column from the weekend, which was great, which is about reviewing President Barack Obama, whether or not he's the funniest president we've ever had. He's pretty funny. He's got a nice, they had a lot of little videos and things that he's done and the stuff he's done in front of the correspondents' dinner. But Chris kind of almost treats it like a show, and he reviews Barack Obama's 8 years of being the funny president.
He's funny.
Yeah.
Is this on?
Yeah.
You're looking at me and talking, so I'm just nodding and saying, uh-huh. Like you're talking to
that's,
me.
That's what they teach you in radio school.
Who's funnier than Barack Obama? Like Lyndon Johnson?
Bill
or
Clinton?
Who?
Maybe Bill Clinton?
Was unintentionally?
Bill Clinton? Yeah, but Bill Clinton was doing all that kind of... Yeah, right? Who? Who do you think, Pete? I don't know. I'm thinking, I mean, I guess maybe George, I don't know, George W. Bush?
He was pretty funny.
I'm trying to think of who's, you're right, who's funny.
Maybe it's a latter-day thing. They're just getting funnier as time goes on.
There's so many.
The next guy is Trump. We're never going to stop laughing.
All right, my guest tonight at the Big Table just released a new album on Bloodshot Records. It's called Upland Stories, and it's the 11th record for Chicagoan Robbie Foulkes. Foulkes plays country-influenced roots and folk and rock and roll, but those words don't really mean anything. But Robbie's words do. Lauded is one of the best songwriters in the country. Foulkes continues to be a shining light for a type of intimate, melodic, and soulful music that we just don't hear recorded much anymore. Robbie Foulkes and his guitar are here tonight. They're my guests at the Big Table. Robbie, thanks for being here.
Thank you for that introduction. I know you weren't talking to me there, so I was just looking around while you were doing that.
Why don't we start with a song? What are we going to play? What are we going to play? Play something for us.
I'm going to play the first tune on the record. It went up on the front of the Rolling Stone website just this afternoon. I'm bragging now. And
you like RollingStone.com, no big deal.
RollingStone.com, RobbieFoulkes.com. And this is this tune about poor people in the South. A red-tailed hawk sat watchful at the faded edge of day. The phone poles and the pines rose from the scoured clay. The sun was slipping toward the gulf in its own good time, and you would not think of death if you drove on past the signs. The old men at the roadhouse weren't too polite to stare. Where we'd come from wasn't home, and we were far from even there. The camera around my neck drew suspicious eyes to me, but we were not there to talk, we were only there to see. And when their faces had said nothing, was then I stepped outside, and in the instant I knew I would not forget the sight. Alabama at night, Alabama at night. You took the wheel up 119, I scanned the road ahead, trying to let all I could see cover up all I had read. That hotel would not likely let a working man lie down. Like a current through its walls ran the sorrow and the sound. And I knelt down to let it in me. Sure it would come if I gave it time. And I've fumbled amongst 100 words, but words don't do it right. Alabama at night, Alabama at night. But what 1,000 others say they might. Through sunlit rooms, the wealthy walk, and the pale and shaven men stand before each frame 5 seconds, maybe 10. And to unveil all the maker wanted to portray, but I'm not there to talk, and if I were, I wouldn't say. Across of rough cut branches in the wide gray shadowed sky, a child not far from birth with the end etched in her eyes. The morning star above her and a hymn upon the breeze, but poor is no sacred song, poor is a disease. And No hand reaches down from heaven, and no one denies it might. So patiently we wait here as onward it rolls, Alabama at night, Alabama at night, Alabama at night. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. Robbie Folks in studio here in the Allstate studio, showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue. Everybody walking by, getting a little bit of Upland Stories, which just came out here in April. Robbie Folks is my guest tonight. We're going to talk about Upland Stories, get some more music. I want to talk about where this music comes from, because this is, you know, this is close to you, because this is really about an area that you grew up in and that you spent a lot of time in.
Yeah, I grew up in, I was born in Pennsylvania, but I mainly grew up in Virginia, North Carolina, and we moved around a lot to little towns. And so oftentimes when I'm writing, I kind of think back to that time and place. And, you know, the farther that it gets away from you, I'm 53 now, the more kind of stature it gains in my mind for some reason. Hmm. I don't know if other people have that experience with their childhoods, but anyway, I return to it a lot. And at one point, when I was working on this record, or when I started working, I was thinking, I just do this too much. It's a crutch, you know, to keep going back to this stuff and to keep setting my songs in the same region. Just, it's time to move on, write about something else. And then I thought, no, what if I just get it all out of my system and I'll do a theme record sort of and just like expunge it all and then I'll move on. So, right. So that's
not going to happen. There'll be an Upland Stories 2. I'm going to do a sequel.
God, I hope not.
But that's what writing is. I mean, we've had writers in here. Last week with Jonathan Shapiro, who was a writer for TV, and he said, you know, his advice to a television writer is live a different life before you come to television. Don't come when you're 20 years old and think you're going to write crime dramas and you never lived anything or done anything else, because all of storytelling is about depth and understanding and your own life.
Well, that's part of it too, to be honest, because I've done the same thing, you know, music since the 80s, and it's really like, it's really a bubble that I live in. And I've written a few songs about, you know, about being a musician and that kind of thing, but it's so removed from what most people do, I think, that I don't want to write too much about it. So the big subjects, you know, I'm a country musician, and I think the big subjects that we all go through, you know, having a childhood and falling in love and getting married and having children and dealing with death and losing things. I mean, that's those broad human subjects is what are what I try to aim toward.
Robbie Folks, my guest tonight. Let's take a quick break. The record is called Upland Stories. It's just out in April. We'll hear more from Robbie and his guitar here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. My guest at the big table, Robbie Folks. Robbie, of course, a tremendous Chicago musician who's been performing. I mean, you can see him on stage all the time over at the Hideout. He's got a show coming up. You got a massive tour coming up here for Upland Stories. I mean, it just feels like every other day.
Doing it since April. It came out April 1st, and since April 2nd, I've got this week off, except for the Hideout, and I'm in D.C. this weekend, but I've got most of this week off. But
Just go with your guitar, or do you bring a band on the tour?
No, there's like six of us. It's a big production. For me, it's big. It's not for Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga, it's nothing.
You don't have 96 people on this tour? That's crazy.
I wish. Yeah, right. I wish.
I mean, as a musician, is that a big part of the passion of it? Is the touring? Like, do you like getting out there, getting on these stages, going to different towns, maybe stuff you've never done before, and being able to bring your music to different
audiences?
I
like it, yeah. I mean, it's what I do, really. I mean, I work in the studio on a record every two or sometimes 3 years, and that's still a little bit of a novelty to me, because, you know, I just don't do it. But this I do all the time, you know, and I like driving, and I like playing, and I like meeting people, and I like selling stuff. So, you know, selling stuff may be the least of all those things, but...
Well, let's talk about Upland Stories a little bit more, the record that was put out on the 1st. For you, what's your process like? Do you, I mean, do you sit at home and write the songs and get them right on your acoustic guitar and then bring them into the band? Or are you the kind of musician that collaborates with the musicians, goes away to like a farmhouse? And what is your process when you're
this is filmed, isn't it? I just remember
it is. There's a web camera.
When Frida was here, I remember I was watching it. Where's the camera?
There's one right here, right behind you, and then there's a third one right there. Yeah,
this is like a Weird Albert Brooks kind of a movie, isn't it? All right.
Once in a while, I get people who will text me saying, "Stop picking your nose."
Really?
To me,
and
like,
bring back the weather girl, by the way.
Yeah, right.
She was great.
There you go. So yeah, so you are being filmed.
Great. The process is I go usually into a hotel. Like even if I'm at home, I'll often get a hotel room and I'll go in and I'll sit for 12 hours with a couple breaks, you know, to go eat and stuff, pick a kid up and take him somewhere, one of my kids, or any random kid, and just force myself into that sensory deprivation chamber so that stuff starts coming.
It's hard. It's probably hard to be at home and do it. Because it's
a little
just,
bit.
Not because of necessary distractions, but because, you know, it reminds you of what? Your regular life.
Yeah. I mean, my wife's around a lot. The phone rings. And worst of all, like, the internet is always there. And that's kind of a hard addiction for me to overlook. So when I'm in a hotel room, I'll usually have my cell phone with me. And if there's something I need to know, you know, I'm working on a song and I need to know the name of a town in the middle of Indiana, and I'll look at a map, or I'll need to know about the place that I'm setting the song, you know, stuff like that, then I'll have my phone with me. But it's not nearly as much of a temptation as that big screen.
How much research are you putting into a song? You just mentioned, like, being able to get information. I mean, it seems on this record, it's much more of sort of coherent storytelling of a place. Do you have to, I mean, are you like a journalist? I mean, do you have to sort of set out how you're going to, quote unquote, write this story, write this song?
A little bit journalistic, because I steal things that I overhear people saying in bars sometimes, or sometimes people make observations to me that I find kind of resonant, and then I'll remember and have sometimes, you know, the first person narrator, presumably me, saying a song, you know, even if it's not my sentiment. But like, yeah, I like to have songs set in specific places is what I find. I like to know where the people are and to picture the things that they're looking at, because I think that strongly shapes your outlook, you know, whether you're sitting in Charleston, Illinois, telling your story, or Baton Rouge, Louisiana, or New York City, New York. And so I try to set them in places I've been. And like on the last record, I set a song in South Bend, Indiana, where I've driven around a little bit, but I haven't spent much time. So I spent a little time just looking at the maps and looking at pictures of the trees, getting a feeling for the topography and the vegetation, mm-hmm. and the way the layout of the streets and how the bars look, and, you know, just photos from the community. So I can help visualize what I'm writing about.
Robbie Folks in studio with me. You know what we're going to do? We'll take a break and hit the news so we're on time.
That
so I can get
good.
As much song out of you as possible. Because if we play a song now, we'll go late into the news, and then the next, and I'll have to break, and then we'll be like, where's Robbie Folks' song?
So I just lost half your listeners with my explication.
No, not at all. That's what they want to hear.
And then...
No, I think it's interesting that, you know, like, it's not sort of like just sort of coming up with what rhymes. I mean,
it's
for you...
It's pretty interesting. But the news is going to be good.
Well, the news is always interesting. Yeah, maybe you could write a song off the news, which I know you do. So anyway,
let's
coming up, we'll do... some live performance with Robbie Folks here on The Download. But first, we'll get the news. So stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Robbie Folks. Upland Stories is the new record, his 11th album. He put it out in April. He's touring now. He's going to be at the Hideout on Monday night. You've got two Hideout shows coming up, but you're on tour, correct? I mean, you're got Washington, D.C., all over the East Coast.
Yeah, lately. I mean, when I don't have a brand new record out, I'm there pretty much every Monday. But lately, it's you just have to look at the calendar. It's kind of scattered.
Yeah. All right, well, coming up Monday, you can see Robbie Folks. Before we continue with the conversation, we should listen to some Robbie Folks and his guitar. What do you want to play here?
Oh, Lordy. I'm going to play another one from the new record. The last one I played was a little bit bleak, and this one is more lighthearted. This is called KDK.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I said I'm from Poor Valley, for wealth I had to have it. I wed a well-born woman as skinny as a rabbit. Now I'm here at this payphone begging Katie, listen, I'll trade you half a million for your sweet Poor Valley kissing. Hey now, Katie K, heaven never made one cuter. If I didn't love Katie K, I'd probably have to shoot her. Now some give all their favors to a girl who's looking fine, but a girl that's sad and weeping will always win mine. When I see a pretty girl weeping, I run to her and fix it. When I see a pretty girl smiling, I head for the nearest exit. Hey now, Katie K, heaven never made one cuter. If I didn't love Katie K, I'd probably have to shoot her. Love thy neighbor is a thing I bear in mind. It's a love him as thyself part I can't get behind. Each greeting he cold shoulders, each smile met with a sneer. His wife can love him all she likes while I gaze at the mirror. Hey now, Katie K, heaven never made one cuter. If I didn't love Katie K, I'd probably have to shoot her. Verse. It's the best verse of all. Oh, yeah. The man who is a Mormon, his values are askew. He's got more women that he can count. All I need is two. A bag of bones and a diamond ring to siphon off my pay. And a sweet thing down on the edge of town to love my nights away. Hey now, Katie K, heaven never made one cuter. If I didn't love Katie K, I'd probably have to shoot her. I said, hey now, Katie K, heaven never made one cuter. If I didn't love Katie K, I'd probably have to shoot her.
Almost.
Love it.
All right.
Robbie Folks in studio here at the Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, the Allstate Studio here at WGN Radio. Awesome song. Listen to you. I mean, you got two things going. You've got great songwriting, but you really, really handled that guitar. In your mind, do you consider yourself a guitar player or a songwriter?
Oh, boy, do I have to pick? I don't know. I don't know.
Let's pretend it's a game
guitar.
Show. You got to pick one. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd pick the guitar, man. That's just fun. You know, if I could give up the writing's a drag. It's hard, but sitting around playing the guitar, that's great. That's fun. You know,
why do you say the writing is a drag? I mean, it seems like one of the things that you bring to the music is this thoughtful, sort of soulful, melodic, intimate, approach to the music, and it seems like you're pouring your heart into it. So why is it such a drag?
Well, it is nice when you go out and do a show to have something original to offer. You know, I mean, when I was young, I was in a bluegrass band for a couple of years, then I did line dance country music for a couple of years, and I loved doing it. I've done weddings, you know, and all this kind of stuff, like the jobber kind of thing that musicians do, and I could really go on doing that and enjoy it. You know, just the process of playing and communicating with other musicians is pretty satisfying to me. But I think if you did that all your life, I mean, some of those guys get kind of bitter. And I think it relates to like just giving people endlessly, you know, stuff they've heard and stuff they yeah. expect and stuff they want to hear. And if you can bring some creativity to it and make people stop talking for a minute and listen to something that you're saying that you've thought about and shaped yourself, then that's, I guess that's ultimately more satisfying than singing Achy Breaky Heart for the 14th time.
What do you do to keep from the bitters? You know, what is it for you, Robbie Foulkes, you know, in the point where you're like, okay, I've done 11 records. You've countless live shows, so many different songs that you've written over the time. What do you do to keep it fresh, to evolve as a musician?
Well, I don't really, my temperament is just doesn't have bitterness in it so much. I mean, I get disappointed and disheartened and stuff by things that happen in life, but I don't think bitterness is part of my vocabulary exactly. I've seen other, I'm going to say something bad about the dead right now. Guy Clark was a guy that I liked a lot and learned stuff from. But one time, the first time I met him, he was coming out of a hotel room. We were at a festival. A guy just died the other day. Yeah. And he came out of the room and he had to go do a set at this festival. It was in Norway. And he kind of sighed and looked really tired. And he said, here we go, back to work. He said it like that. And that was Guy. I mean, that was Guy in a nutshell, I think. But when I saw it, I was kind of young, and I thought, oh, yeah, don't do that. You know, no matter how old you get and tired of it all, just put on a good face. Remember that you're in a privileged position. I'm not working in a coal mine. I'm not going to an office temp job. I'm playing the guitar for people. It's a real privilege, you know, so I try to keep that perspective on it.
What you do on Monday nights at the Hideout also sort of fuels your creativity. Every time there's a Monday night show with Robbie Foulkes, it's not the same. You're not just getting up there and playing nine songs and saying, good night, everybody. Okay, I'll do one more.
Right.
You're coming up with different ways. I mean, you mentioned Frida Love Smith. There's other musicians in town that you work with. But talk about your experience at the Hideout on Monday nights, because that seems to be almost fuel for you.
Yeah, it's really just a laboratory for me, and it's a total ego boost, because any like random thought that comes into my mind. One time I wanted to sort of rearrange the songs on Bob Dylan's Street Legal and do it as a concept, and I did that over there. Another time we've covered various records like Get Happy by Elvis Costello. I did a thing with Mike Shannon there, the actor. After Lou Reed died, we covered a record of Lou's called The Blue Mask, and Michael performed as Lou Reed, and we were the backup band. And then I'm just dropping, you know, a famous guy's name partly what I'm doing. but really, like friends in town that I wouldn't otherwise get to play with that much, people like Eric Noden and John Langford and Steve Dawson and Nora O'Connor, Kelly Hogan, and then other friends passing through, maybe they'll do a show at the Old Town Saturday night and stick around town, come do that Monday. And then otherwise, themes, you know, I do a lot of themes over there, like I'm doing a theme of Lewis, people named Lewis, not this Monday, but next. So we'll call it Lollapalooas. And if your name is Lewis, you get in free. If, there's a musician named Lewis, like Jerry Lee Lewis or Lou Christie or Lou Whitney or Louis Armstrong, we'll cover some of that stuff. But also like Louis Farrakhan and Lou Costello a tribute to Lewis's everywhere.
I love it. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. One more song. Can we get another song from you?
Yeah, you bet.
Robbie Foulkes is here in studio. His new record, Upland Stories, is out now. We'll continue our conversation with Robbie here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. My guest tonight at the big table, Robbie Foulkes, Upland Stories. The new album is out. Robbie Foulkes, a tremendous musician, songwriter, named one of the best in the country by several publications right here in Chicago. Does it mean anything for you? I mean, obviously, you grew up, we talk about Upland, like that's sort of the Kentucky, Virginia, Tennessee kind of area. Is that what Upland means?
I think so. I think of Kentucky and Tennessee and sort of the non-mountainous parts of Virginia and the Carolinas. I think of it as the opposite of the Deep South. People can go on Wikipedia and like find out what it really is. And
But the idea is it's the northern part of the South.
Uh-huh.
And that's where you kind of grew up and spent your formidable years. But do you consider yourself from that area? Or at this point, do you consider yourself a Chicagoan?
I'm a Chicagoan. You know, I've been here for almost 3 years, I guess. So I can't deny it. Yeah, I'm a Chicagoan.
Do you find it?
But the music.
That's what I was going to ask about the music, yeah.
You know, I mean, I love Chicago music, and everybody does. But to me, the music of the Southeast, I mean, that's just it. That's what moves my heart, really. Fiddles.
Is there a migration of that kind of music to Chicago? I mean, you've been at the Old Town School of Folk Music. You've seen it. Are there sort of can you find sort of trails to that music here in Chicago?
Absolutely. I mean, the barn dance on WLS is a distinguished part of country music history in the 20s, and that brought a lot of people from George Goble to Lulu Bell and Scotty up here. You know, the early country pioneers. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of the people that I grew up on that are, you know, still influences in my music, like Doc Watson, John Hartford, and Earl Scruggs, people like that, are just, to me, they're Southeast people. You know. Mm-hmm.
What are you going to play? You got one more song in you?
Oh, God. I was trying to think of something to do that I haven't done a million times. Does it matter whether it's 2 minutes or four?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. We're just trying to kill time.
Yes, that's what we're trying to do. I mean, shorter means we can, you know, we can talk more, but, you know, you've got essentially 7 minutes, so do the math.
Okay. I'll do you one from my last record. Backward is the record, and the song is called Imogene.
Robbie Folks.
Hey now, my Imogene. Out here on your back porch, I've been scratching at your screen. Hey now, you sure smell fine. Things I'll never tell you. I've been doing to you in my mind. Maybe I'm a stone heart, maybe I'm kind, maybe I love you, maybe I'm lying. I could rip your lid off and make you scream if you would be my long-legged Imogene. Don't that old moon sail high? Clear across the meadow, I can hear your fiddle cry. Playing on that maiden's prayer, shakes me from my sleeping, makes me want to steal away from here. Man at my job's got nothing to say. He's from out the jungles of Somalia. I've been in the kitchen up to my knees in jalapeno ham bone and black-eyed peas. My Imogene.
out here on your back porch with the jug of sweet Jim Beam. Hey now, it would sure be fine if we could lose your old man and do what I've been doing in my mind. And you could be my long-legged emoji.
Yeah. Robbie Folks, live in studio, the All-State Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue. Robbie Folks, the new record is Upland Stories. It was just out in April. You're going to be at the Hideout on the 23rd. And I believe the 30th.
Yeah,
I think that's
right.
What it is, right? And you're also on tour. If anyone's listening, in any, I mean, just pretty much every day until July or August.
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty much on tour.
End of August. Yeah.
So, I mean, what is next for you? I mean, obviously, here comes the touring and this big thing off the record. But you said every couple years or every year or so you get in and do the record. I do. How long does it take for you to sort of permeate around an idea? Like with the Upland Stories, you know, you sort of talked about how that sort of came from and you were going to put that to bed, your sort of childhood and the stories of what's next for you? What can we expect from Robbie Folks?
I'm not sure. I was thinking about working on a bluegrass record or maybe on a Nora O'Connor and I keep talking about doing a record together. And I think maybe one of those things I might start up next. I'm also working on a couple plays. One is sort of a James Agee kind of inspired deal that was on the back burner, and a couple songs ended up on this record.
Yeah, right.
But I'm hoping to get back to that. And meanwhile, there's another play I'm doing with my friend Mark Roberts. It's kind of a country music themed play, and that seems to be going ahead full speed. So I think next year that'll go up somewhere, and we'll be finished with it before the end of this year probably. So yeah, there's always stuff going on. Luckily.
Always.
Yeah, and I'll be out panhandling on the street if all that stuff falls through. You'll see me right out here on the corner of Michigan
Wacker. There's some serious competition over here. The guys who've got their saxophone who do A Wonderful World, and they do A Whole New World.
Oh, really?
Over
like Robin Williams,
over
Moscow
and over
Hudson,
yeah.
Just blowing out
a
there.
A Whole New World, that one. And it's just,
I cannot compete with that.
You can have a hard time, Robbie.
Gene, hello, hello.
Yeah. And there's a guy who is in full silver paint out here, so you're going to have to do a lot to get people's attention.
Oh, is that like
but
Betty Ebsen from The Tin Man? Or
essentially, something
makeup?
Like that, yeah. Robbie Folks, a longtime singer-songwriter
keeping
here in Chicago.
Keeping the references current here.
Upland Stories is the new record. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for bringing your guitar, and I can't wait to have you
Total
again.
Total pleasure, Justin. Thanks for having me.
All right. That was awesome. Robbie Folks, always a pleasure to have him in here.
Wow.
Yeah, right?
Like, really talented.
It's amazing how much talent is here in the city of Chicago. And Robbie Folks, I mean, really, I was going through the praise and the press for his new record. And the Rolling Stone, I mean, I wasn't surprised they were going to change their magazine to Robbie Folks.
I mean, just,
they were so into him.
You know, all this talent in the city, just look at this show.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
I know, it's been great. I mean, we've been having a lot of great performances on the show. Robbie is such a good performer, and he's a treasure for Chicago because you can go. You know who he reminds me of? A country music version of Woody Allen. And I don't mean that in personality at all, but the old sort of lore about Woody Allen is you can go on a Monday night in New York City and see him in the jazz band, you know, on the Upper East Side of New York. You just walk in and pay the $10 cover, and he's playing clarinet in a jazz band. And the same goes for the Saturday Night Live cast members. They'll be on Saturday night, and then on Monday you can go to the UCB Theater in New York City, and, oh, my God, there's Tina Fey doing improv right in front of us in this black box theater. But Robbie Folks, you know, in the country music scene, he's really, really famous. Like, he's a guy who, like, he goes around, he goes on these tours. He's played Chicago Theater. Like, he's a big deal. And it's the same kind of concept that you can go on a Monday night to the Hideout and see Robbie Foulkes and Mike Shannon, you know, doing Lou Reed covers. It's what makes a city a city. I love that. I love that we have that. I love that Chicago has that. Robbie Foulkes. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Chris Jones, Chicago Tribune chief theater critic, will be here. We'll talk Lorraine Hansberry. We'll talk Steppenwolf's 40th. We'll also talk about his big column he had in the Sunday paper, which was about Barack Obama. Is Barack Obama the funniest president we've ever had? A lot of people say yes. I mean, you know, for everything from what he did with Zach Galifianakis between Two Ferns to what we just saw at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So we'll talk with Chris about that coming up at 10 o'clock. Well, today was a big day in the Chicago art world. Expo Chicago, which brings galleries, vendors, and artists to Chicago this fall, announced their exhibition lineup, which galleries will be representing. Expo Chicago is becoming a bigger and bigger event each year, and it hopes to rival some of the biggest art shows in the country, like Basel in Miami. Could Chicago be the epicenter for this country's contemporary art industry? Tony Carman is the president and director of Expo Chicago, and he joins me now. Tony, thanks for being here. Nice to have you here. This is great.
Justin, honor to be here as well. This is great to see.
So let's talk about today, the big announcement. This is sort of the beginning of the ramp up for Expo Chicago.
Yeah, I like to say this is now real. We internationally announced what 140 galleries from 50 cities, 20 international countries that are going to be descending in our city September 22 to 25. And now we're real. Now we're not chasing who's in. We know now it's about framing, shaping the programming and attracting, as we have over the last 5 years and the history for many years, attracting the world to our great city.
I'm always amazed at how much time and energy is spent months before the actual event. For you to be able to bring to announce this now in May means that this has been a couple pretty busy months for you.
Oh my gosh. We really, and you know, everyone hears me say this often, we start on the next year while we're at the fair in the current year. We really do, because you're really thinking ahead. You're sowing the seeds of partnerships that you want to do with great institutions or collectors or curators or things that we're going to be announcing that is actually going to be playing off in 2017 and 18. We're actually already working on all that framework. So the minute the fair ends, we're out in the world to tell the world, listen, you've got to participate in this fair. You've got to come to Chicago and see what's happening. And that's the other benefit to this. I always say that the fair is 5 days in Chicago, but it's a convening moment for the international art world, collectors, curators, art enthusiasts to descend in our city and see really what's happening here 365 right. days out of the year, to go to our great museums, to see our artists, to see our galleries here. That's what makes Chicago vibrant and extraordinary. And so what we get to do is illuminate that in a unique way and in a robust way, really, for everyone to take advantage of.
Let me ask you. I mean, you're obviously, as director and president of Expo Chicago, you're a booster for the art scene. But you come from the auditorium theater. You come from a different kind of world. What was or what is Chicago's place in the art world? I mean, for the layman out there who's listening to WGN Radio, where does Chicago stack up among some of the great cities that sort of are the representative of the art world?
Well, that's a great question. It's always fun for me to answer that because actually I was there when there was only one fair in Chicago, and I moved here in 1982. I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grow up. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. Right. But most importantly, I was exposed to what was then called the Chicago International Art Exposition. And to many of the listeners that don't know what an international art fair, and I can understand, you know, what is that? It's a trade show, in theory. It's 145 galleries that are showing artists from their program. And many of these galleries that participate in Expo Chicago only do the major art fairs in the world. So it's really important that it's the highest level. Right. Now, back to my story. I move here in 1982. I don't know what I want to be. There's a there's a posting for a security guard job at the Chicago International Art Exposition, which I did. And then when the fair happened, I made myself indispensable, and hence I got exposed to this extraordinary event. Back then, through the 80s and 90s, there was only really four or five art fairs in the world. Now, you know, don't quote me on this, but there may be 300 art fairs in the world. But for 20 years, from 1979 really until the early 2000s, the only art fair at this level, international art event, in North and South America was Chicago.
Really?
Yes. So the tradition, the legacy, the
why isn't that a bigger? I mean, why isn't that sort of a bigger known quantity? Like when we talk about what Chicago is known for, we're known for this and that. You know, we got great museums and sports town. Why not say and art? You know, like in art fairs, you know,
you know,
like
what I guess it's about, you know, thank you for giving me the opportunity, the platform to say it to.
But why doesn't,
you know,
the art community sort of trumpet,
know,
that?
I think, you know, in absolute defense, I think we do in many ways. If you're around the world, and luckily I get to be an ambassador, not only for Expo Chicago, but for our great city when I travel to other art fairs, there's no question that everyone understands that this was the great American city that hosted a great international art fair for all that time. There's no question that Art Basel Miami Beach, that happens every December, has grown into a juggernaut and of importance that really eclipsed us in those, in, you know, when it was launched in 2002. But we get to leverage our great tradition, and we have rebuilt in 5 years. We're going into our fifth edition. That renewal, that pride, that focus on our city. So I guess all things take time, and, you know,
well, we're building something,
and we're building again the tradition that the art world loved for all those years.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about the art community here in Chicago, and also the Expo Chicago, which will be coming up here in September. Tony Carman is the president and director of Expo Chicago. We'll continue our conversation. Stay with us. It's a little art music right there, right? Zimmer bringing out look, art cocktail music there. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tony Carman's my guest tonight, president and director of Expo Chicago, the big art fair here in Chicago, which will be coming up in September. Tonight was a big announcement of the galleries that are going to be showing at the Expo Chicago. You know, for you, this is as much about sort of showcasing Chicago's art community to other communities. They're going to come in. That's the idea. People from, like you mentioned, from Basel, from Miami, from New York, from Rome, from other places, they come in and they get to experience Chicago art. What does that mean to you?
Oh, it's everything. You know, as I said, not only do I feel that the fair's role is to open that door, but our role that works with the fair is to be ambassadors for our city. That's what happens, is the art enthusiasts, curators, collectors, writers, artists, business leaders of respective cities around the world will come to Chicago not only for the art fair, but they're also going to come and explore. They're going to come and explore the gallery scene and the restaurant scene and the performance scene.
That's tourism,
and music.
Yeah.
And it's pure international cultural tourism in its highest, most wonderful way.
You think about it that way, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, to try and bring the sort of art industry to Chicago, like you would draw Lollapalooza or the James Beards or any of the other sort of big industry things that we have coming to Chicago.
And you said that. I mean, really, this is what we announced today was the lineup, just like Lollapalooza announced who's performing. We announced what 145 galleries are participating. And I think that's the flower that draws the bees, right? That's really what, and I'm awfully proud that we are at the level of all the major international art fairs in the world, that our flowers, the galleries participating, are really at the highest level.
All right, let's talk about the galleries. I mean, who would you showcase as galleries locally and internationally that are going to be here?
Oh, boy, you're going to make me choose. Now, that's tough. You know what? Can I change the subject a little bit?
Sure.
You know, there's with the galleries, I'm thrilled about a gallery MoMo, a gallery from Johannesburg, right from South Africa, that is doing extraordinary things, that are making the effort to come all the way here to showcase their program.
Let me ask
That's
you,
important.
Maybe the better question before we get into specifics is, how do you choose a gallery? I mean, what's the criteria? Tell me about that.
No, it's a great. We don't on the staff of Expo Chicago. We have a selection committee of notable galleries that are participating in the fair, and every year, back in February, we announced that applications were available. So hundreds of applications came in to participate in the fair, and a peer review, a group of eight gallerists that are participating in the fair, who are respected and noted, went through a selection committee back in March to really refine who is selected in. So it's very competitive, and I think that competitive bar is what has raised us very quickly to the top of the world.
For Expo Chicago, being in Chicago, how important is it to have Chicago galleries represented?
Hugely important. I, in numbers, because I did the math today, 16 galleries of the 145 galleries in Chicago in the fair are from Chicago. And to them, it is an important statement. And I think to anyone listening, it's an important statement that we actually have an amazingly robust, active, looked upon artist and gallery scene that is vibrant and gives everything that an artist scene does really to any city in the world, and works at the highest level with our great institutions.
I'm always amazed at this city's ability to evolve when it comes to art, because, you know, I remember, you know, the River North used to be the spot that you would get all the art galleries, and then it kind of moved to the West Loop, right at the early days of the West Loop, even before the restaurants there were art galleries. And now I see pop-ups that are happening in Pilsen and Bridgeport and other places. I mean, the city has a tremendous amount of working artists that are creating scenes around it. From you at the top, I mean, for Expo Chicago, are you paying attention to the sort of trends and the scenes that are happening sort of at the street level with art?
Yeah, you know, we have to, and we also have to respond to it during the fair. We also want to make sure that anyone coming in or anyone from Chicago that might get exposed to the art scene through what we've got going on know that they should get out and explore what you just said, the apartment gallery scene, which is a really unique artist.
What is that?
Well, you know, there was a lot of artist-driven small galleries within apartments, and the apartment gallery scene is really a Chicago thing that is not seen in many other cities. I mean, that's so Chicago, right? It's so do-it-yourself.
Your roommate gets to stay on the couch when people come through.
Let's put up an exhibition. But the reason for that is what Chicago has that many other cities don't, is an amazing schools that are generating really the next artists of that either staying here or moving on and going to other places. School of the Art Institute of Chicago, the Department of Visual Arts at the University of Chicago, Northwestern, University of Illinois.
They
University
all have strong art programs. Yeah.
Strong art programs, and add to that then the institutions that are here in the museums, you've got an ecosystem that is conducive to really turning out the best. And we do. And we, you know, it's another layer of greatness that we get to herald in Chicago.
All right. So what's it going to take for Chicago to be the epicenter? I mean, that's the sort of thesis of this whole segment. I mean, we are at the point where you're building, you're getting bigger, you're getting closer to rivaling a Basel and South Beach. What's it going to take for the art world to go, the place to be every fall is Chicago?
Well, you know what? We're chipping away at that, and we're doing our best to present at the highest level, as I keep repeating myself. I think it's a collective, and it's a collective message that all of us engaged in this community.
Do you need, the mayor? Do you need, city officials to be able to go, almost like trying to get the Olympics here?
You know what? I again will say to you, and this is really the truth, we are so grateful that we have had the support of the civic leaders and the mayor's office and the Department of Cultural Affairs and the civic and business leaders that recognize this is not just a fair that takes place for 5 days at Navy Pier. This is an experience that draws thousands of international cultural tourists. Mm-hmm. It's important to the city because, you know what, I'm city proud. I've been here for 35 years. I've never left this city. My career is here. You know, I live, breathe, and eat this city in so many ways. And I love it for what you just said. It always evolves. It always changes. I had the perspective of being a part of a fair in many, many years ago. It just didn't sit right with me that we didn't have it at the level with which right. you just mentioned.
Right.
And I think we're there at that place where we're there making that noise internationally, and we're there because we really have gotten the support of everyone. And
make no small plans.
Make no small plans.
That's I love right. it, man. You're the right guy for the job. Tony Carman is the president and director of Expo Chicago, which is the big international art fair that's going to be at Navy Pier this September. We're rooting for you. I'm rooting for you. I'm You got to come back before the event. Come back, and I'd love to talk to you more about your career. You know, because you've done so many things here in Chicago in the arts and culture world. I'd love to sit down with you and talk a little bit longer.
I'd love to be here, and by next time I come back, I bet I'll have a few little nuggets of fun to share.
Great, thanks, Tony. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, you know, last time our resident philosopher, Al Genie, the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago, last time he was here, he bummed us out, man. He was like, you know what, we need to stop being such babies about the fatigue of this election, and we need to start recognizing that this is our right, and we need to, it's a duty to vote. So we thought to energize you at home right now to get more excited about the presidential election, that we would bring Al back and talk about some presidential factoids, some fun stuff. You promised not to yell at anybody, right? You
know,
you're
gonna yell at anybody about their duty. or speak over you. I'm so sorry.
No.
But fun stuff about the presidency. So there's a lot of quizzes here. You're supposed to be the guru. For example, Mr. Obama is the 44th president, correct? But that's wrong. He's the 43rd president. Do you know why he's called the 44th president?
Why?
Because Grover Cleveland was elected twice separately. So he was elected once, and then
so
it
he
was
can't
a break.
Be like, he can't be the
so he's called
and the 21st,
no he's no. called two different he gave they gave him oh. two different numbers oh, he has okay. two different numbers. So really we're not electing the 45th president of the United States, we're actually electing the 44th person.
Well, that did it, Al. I'm now thanks, excited thanks to that deep that factoid did it.
Little no, factoid,
but you've got a lot here
a lot
you put
stuff.
Together and
for
I thank you for this
for example. I think right now, in the present mood, after the two wars we've been through and after Vietnam, it's going to be a very, very rare situation where a general will be elected president of the United States. But there have been 12 generals that have been elected as president of the United States. And that's a fascinating number when you talk about it. And you know at least two.
Okay, so Washington, obviously.
Right?
Grant.
Right.
I would say Eisenhower.
Absolutely.
Was Andrew Jackson a general?
Absolutely,
yeah,
Andrew Jackson. Appointed political, but don't forget the Battle of New Orleans and the killing of the Seminoles, et cetera, et cetera.
Here's
what you don't know.
Okay.
Our most handsome president ever is Franklin Pierce, and he was a general in the Mexican War. Nobody even knows Franklin Pierce was president of the United States.
But he was handsome.
And he was absolutely handsome. And, of course, Chester Arthur, again, another major presidential figure, right?
Right.
Was in the Civil War, and Rutherford B. Hayes and Benjamin Harris. So there were actually 12 different people, and 30% of all presidents had some military experience. In fact, the embarrassment was, remember Bill Clinton is the first non-military.
Well, a certain time in this country, it was almost a prereq. And it wasn't just military service, it was officer training. You had to be an officer.
Absolutely. Yeah. You didn't want a private there. Of course, Dwight David Eisenhower and General Grant were the only two presidents to graduate from
West Point,
of course. And the only president to graduate from a Catholic college?
Kennedy.
No, Bill Clinton. Kennedy's a Harvard boy. Don't forget that. And the only president with a PhD?
Doctor. Who would be a doctor for Dr. Let me just try this out. Hold on.
Okay.
Dr. Ford. Carter.
Jerry Ford. No, get too many head hits while in Michigan. No. Woodrow Wilson, who was president of
Dr. Wilson,
president
you're
of
next...
Princeton, and then governor of New Jersey for short term, and then president of the United States. And Wilson said that he went into politics because he wanted to get out of the politics of academia.
You know, we should do that. I'm sure the listeners at home are listening so angry with me. They've probably heard five or six of your questions now, and they're like, Kaufman, get it together. This is not my area of expertise. I'd like to know more about this.
Absolutely. How about this, for example? The president has written the most books. You're going to be totally surprised at this. In fact, you were an intern, and I interviewed him once with you.
Okay, well.
For a former president.
Okay, well, the presidents I've met in my life have been Barack Obama when he was a state senator and Jimmy Carter.
That's right.
You
met him with me, and Jimmy Carter has written 27 books. And I interviewed him on the first book he did on fly fishing, And he took me for breakfast at the coffee shop at the bottom of the other place that we used to work.
27 books.
Yes.
I mean, were they books before? I mean, was this all after his present?
Yes, all after. After his present. He didn't know what to do. His staff
gave him George W. Bush paints a computer. And Jimmy Carter.
They gave him a computer, which was, you know, this huge thing, and a wood workshop. And he started writing. He wrote a book on fly fishing, was the first book. And he's written two novels, I believe. And the one out right now is a full reflection at 90. You know, what a sweet book. But he winds up being a good wordsmith, and not bad. Theodore Roosevelt wrote 19 books. Woodrow Wilson, the academic, did only 8. I don't know what he was doing.
I just went to, when I went to spring break, we went to Yosemite.
Yeah.
And here I'll give you a piece, which I don't have a question. I'll just give you the factoid they gave me.
Yeah.
That when Teddy Roosevelt was president, he took off, like, without telling anybody.
Right.
Like, imagine this, like, for a 3-day vacation to whoever was the parks guy to go to Yosemite to see Yosemite and to this because he was instrumental in the creation of the park system.
Right.
So he just said, they're like, where'd the president go? He's like, he'll be back.
He went up there and they shot things. Those are the days they shot things. Teddy Roosevelt went off to Africa and killed so many animals.
The trivia question would be like, which president disappeared for 3 days and didn't tell his secretary? Right.
He was really an outdoorsman. Of course, Barack Obama's probably made more money than everybody with his 3 books.
Really?
But connected to that, these wonderful prizes. Nobel laureates as president of the United States.
Well, of course, I mean, Obama, that was a big story.
That was a big Jimmy Carter, right?
Oh, after that, I don't know.
You've already used both their names already.
Okay, so Teddy Roosevelt,
right, for the Russian-Japanese War. And then Woodrow Wilson for the League of Nations. We forget Woodrow Wilson, this kind of stick-in-the-mud individual, but the first president to ever use the radio. In fact, he was so used to lecturing that when they in the first radio speech, he stood up. He stood up to do it. He couldn't sit down at the desk to do it. But Woodrow Wilson only, you know, for the League of Nations, which led to the United Nations and a very real.
All right, Al, you've got it. Let's rapid fire through some of these next ones. Okay, what do you got?
Two presidents who served as presidents of universities. I already gave you one. As Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson, I was going to say.
You know, you got to pay a little more attention. Yeah, you're never going to pass this course.
Just default. It's Woodrow Wilson.
And Dwight David Eisenhower. Okay. Because they didn't know what to do after the war. So Columbia University made him a president of Columbia University for a while because he had never voted before. He never declared in a party. He had to have a job. He was out of NATO. He didn't know what to do. Let's make him president of Columbia. There's a joke that they really meant to make Milton Eisenhower because he was an academic. But somebody wrote, that's not true, but it's a wonderful story. It's absolutely a wonderful story. And the college that has graduated the most number of presidents would,
Harvard.
Of course, be Harvard.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's a no-brainer. I was going to say Harvard or Oberlin, but I don't think there's no Oberlin.
Oberlin's right up there.
Yeah, that's right up there. But it's
by Northern Illinois. Yeah, right. I think we're talking about real equations.
Drake and Des Moines.
Not so much. And then, the one I find most interesting is this presidents who are related. For, of course, we've had two father-sons things. And no matter what you may think of the second Bush, think about the family.
It's amazing.
The amazing honor it is for a family and, of course, the power and connect to that. But John Adams, the second president of the United States, and John Quincy Adams, his son, who had served as Secretary of State, who has served in so many different ways, ambassador, so on and so forth, and George Bush, H. Bush, and George W. Bush, et cetera, et cetera. But Benjamin Harrison was the grandson of William Henry Harrison.
Okay.
Both separated. John Tyler was a great uncle of Truman. And Teddy Roosevelt was the uncle of Eleanor Roosevelt and the cousin of FDR.
There you go.
And you know, what's really interesting, too, is Teddy Roosevelt was really, by our standards today, a Democratic activist, but, you know, they morphed into the Republicanism. And once FDR declared a Democrat, the family split. Very serious way. Most number of children. Come on, this no one's going to get this, and it's a staggering number.
All right. How many kids?
Try kids. How many kids? How many things?
I don't know, 7?
14. John Tyler. He only served one term. Obviously, he had other things to do. 14 children. Just an amazing kind of thing. Just amazing. And, of course, the ones that touch us right now, the youngest and the oldest. The youngest was Jack Kennedy at 43 when he was elected. And Teddy Roosevelt was 42 when he was vice president, but then was 44 when he was president after McKinley was shot. And the oldest was Reagan, and I think Taylor. I think Taylor was up there too. Harrison.
Let me ask before we wrap this up. I mean, are you just poring over? Is this really get you going?
No, it gets me going because I think personalities, character, and talent make up the presidency. I want to know what that person thinks. Years ago when I interviewed, and you were on the other side of the microphone, Eddie Vrdoljak, I asked him why he wanted to be mayor of Chicago. And he said, well, when I'm mayor of Chicago, we're going to do X. And I said, no, why do you want to be mayor of Chicago? And he said, well, right. When I'm mayor of Chicago, the police force is going to do Y.
Right.
And then I kept saying, so we went to the break, and he said, kid, you asked me that question again? You know, I'm going to walk out of here. I want to be mayor because it's my turn. I think what's interesting to find out how these people think, where they've been to school, what they care about, who are they as human beings. I think Barack Obama, for example, no matter what your political allegiance, has returned dignity and a certain stature to the presidency and a certain demeanor to the presidency. I want to look at these people and say, what did you do? How did you get there? Why is it important? What was your training? For example, 19 were senators, 14 were vice presidents, 23 of them were lawyers. That says something great deal.
Yeah,
I want to know how a person thinks, what they've done. What I really like about Theodore Roosevelt was every day for years and years and years when he was president, at 1 o'clock he went out and played with his kids, and then he took a walk for an hour. That says something about the man. It says something about the office.
Okay, so let's wrap it up.
Okay.
The other factoids you have here, only president to resign.
Of course, Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon.
Who died in office.
There's eight who've died in office, and I think we forget that. William Henry Harrison died in office. Zachary Taylor Harrison died from walking in the presidential parade, catching a cold and dying. Zachary Taylor probably died of food poisoning. Warren G. Harding supposedly died of a heart attack. There's some talk that Warren G. Harding was done away by his wife because Warren G. Harding was caught delectico fragrante a number of times.
Oh.
Warren G. Harding was a ladies' man. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt, of course, died of congestive heart failure.
And of course.
But assassinated, we forget. JFK. Lincoln was the first. Garfield is not just a park. Garfield was an important individual in the Reconstruction. And McKinley, which led to Teddy, and of course, in my lifetime, John Kennedy. I didn't calibrate the number of presidents have been shot. I think only two and survived. Mr. Reagan. And from Michigan, Jerry Ford was shot at, but I don't think it was actually shot.
Okay, the last one we're going to do here is favorite presidential quote.
Yep. My favorite friends are, okay, this is let me set this up a little bit. Calvin Coolidge was, of course, Ronald Reagan's great, you know, he was his image, and he really thought Calvin Coolidge. And if you read about it, this guy was really out of the 20s. He really wanted to do business, and he was a very stern, kind of puritanical. He'd been a governor of, I want to say, Massachusetts or one of the East Coast states. Mm-hmm. And very, very stern man. You see him all the time with the high prince collar and choking along. But he was kind of taciturn. He didn't talk much. He showed up at things, didn't talk much. And a society lady ran up to him at a major ball in which they were raising a lot of money. He says, oh, Mr. President, I've met a great deal of money that I can get you to say more than three words. Please help me out, Mr. President. And he looked at her for a second and said, you lose, madam. Boom.
I don't think I've ever seen you so giddy.
I love it. I love it.
I love
it.
Like
to know that our presidents put their pants on the same way we do, one at a time.
Well, Al Genie is the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago, and he's our resident philosopher and a huge fan of presidential trivia.
Hey, what can I tell you? It's better than following the Cubs sometimes. Take care. See you soon.
Thanks, Al. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, our good friend and regular contributor, chief critic, theater critic for the Chicago Tribune, Chris Jones, will join us. We'll talk about a couple of things. Lorraine Hansberry's birthday. Steppenwolf Theater turns 40, which is pretty cool. We'll also talk about a live archive. So essentially, for far too long, and I know this to be an issue because I once worked on a story where I was trying to find a tape or an archive or something of a theater show that was from the 80s. I was doing a memoriam for an actor who had died of AIDS. And I was trying to find the tape, and I couldn't. They're like, well, those don't exist. I mean, you can go find them through crates in the basement of one of the other actors, you know. UIC had actual copies in the library.
Wow.
That's how I ended up finding it. And but what they're trying to do now is create a live theater archive. So like pretty much every theater will record their show at some point, you know. But what they do with it, they would contribute this to a live theater archive that would live and people could check out or, you know, be able to go see old shows.
Yeah.
Like that. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, because I love seeing all those old Second City videos of, you know, Stephen Colbert and, you know, famous people.
They're really good at it. Second City's really good. They've been able to sort of, you know, digitize that copy, and then you see it show up all the time, like on SplitSide or other places where you're like, oh, cool, here's a Tina Fey.
Yeah, exactly.
Steppenwolf and Goodman are really good at it. They do professional kind of work. You know, when you see a Steppenwolf scene, you're like, well, they just, who filmed this? What, did Spielberg come in and do this one? Like, it's so, like, well done and blocked, and there's camera edits. You're like, you pay an intern to do this? Did you get the production company for $500 to come in? Something tells me you didn't. But it's really, I hope that it will really be a chance to store and archive and give, I guess, give some space for the off-loop stuff.
Yeah.
Off-loop. You know, people who, like, even some of the stuff we were talking about yesterday, Anarchist Songbook with the guys from Edge Theater.
So good.
It was so good. They were so young. And I don't mean that. I'm starting to sound like an old man, 41 years old. But I really, really, I was amazed at Alex and the musicians that they were so, like, their soul, their heart and soul were into this storyline that doesn't seem to resonate with kids in their 20s.
You're a humble guy, Justin, and you're mentioning this guy from the Haymarket thing. That
Alex,
he wouldn't have gotten into show business if it wasn't for you.
He came in, and we had booked the show because we wanted to talk about Haymarket and the labor history and his perfect tie into the overtime rules. And he sat down here, and I was like, Alex Higgins Hauser. And I'm like, okay. And I looked around, and then I caught his eye, and I'm like, oh, I know him. But I couldn't place it. I was like, oh, is he an actor? Was he in here on the show before?
Yeah.
I was like, is he on the show before? I think he's on the show. I hate that,
yeah.
Right? Because you pretty much remember everybody from in here. And then I'm like, right before we went to air, I'm like, hey, do we know each other? He's like, yeah, actually, with Schadenfreude, your group, you taught a writing workshop at my college, Carleton College in Minnesota, 10 years ago. And I was like, right. Like, it was an instant picture. I'm like, yes, he's a funny guy. Like, and he's like, yeah, and out of that, like, I got into writing after that workshop, and that's sort of where we got with this show. And I was like,
incredible.
Wow. Welcome to the download. Like,
that's got to be a great feeling.
It is a great feeling. He's a really talented kid. Yeah. He always was. Like when we did the workshop, I remember they did like an opening act, you know, for when we go and do college shows.
Yeah.
They were hilarious. So, yeah, it was great to see he's here. I didn't know he was here. The worst part is I probably should know he's here. He probably emailed me like, hey, I'm like, oh, I'm so I don't have time for you to respond to emails. So I'm sure there's a pompous secondary storyline in this story. It's a download here on WGN Radio, the home stretch. And coming up at 11, Patty Vasquez, Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, takes over. In studio with me now, chief theater critic over at the Chicago Tribune, Chris Jones. Good to see you, Chris.
Always nice to be
always.
Here.
Always. I love it. I feel like it peps up the show. I get a little energy
it does.
Going
on. Livens it up. The I ratings right now, people are tuning
they're,
in.
They've popped station. Their popcorn. They're like, quick, Chris is on. Quick.
Switching stations.
Lorraine Hansberry, it's her birthday.
It is what an amazing woman. I'm telling you. I think let's just start out with the real download on this. I think she is perhaps the greatest writer Chicago ever
really?
Produced. I do. The thing is, she died when she was 34 years old. So she, you know, her output was what you would have done at 34. And but a poet comparable to the very greatest dramatic poets of the late 20th century. Your August Wilson, your Tennessee Williams, right up there with them, Lorraine Hansberry.
Raising the Sun.
Raising in the Sun.
And everyone in theater knows that to be, you know, one of the greatest plays of all time.
Yes.
But do you think she gets outside of that? Does she get the kind of acclaim she deserves?
Well, you know, obviously Denzel Washington did Raisin on Broadway, and there was President Obama and First Lady, and that particular evening I remember thinking, well, there's the full circle for that play, you know, the play that couldn't get done. And now ends up with the first black president of the United States in the audience. And if only Lorraine Hansberry had lived to see that day, could you just imagine? Incomparable day for her. But she wrote this second play, which is at the Goodman right now, called The Sign in Sidney Brustein's Window. And it got terrible reviews when it first came out. And it was partly because it's a bit of a messy play. And this was the early 60s, and people were not very used to messy plays on Broadway. Secondly, Lorraine was dying in a hotel room, literally, while they were doing the play. So it never, you know, kind of got the polish that it needed. And thirdly, it was about a bunch of white people who lived in Greenwich Village. And were sort of, one of them owns a newspaper, one of them's an actress. And the critics were like, why hasn't she written Raisin in the Sun again? You know, what is this strange play? And when you see it now, they missed a masterpiece. I'm telling you. I'm telling you.
How often does that come along for you? For you as a theater critic who goes to Broadway and everything you see in Chicago, how often are you like, wow, oh my God, everyone missed this?
So, yeah, I not very often because, you know, in most great plays, you've seen them.
And they continue to produce
them. And I see
them
every 5 seconds. And, you know, I Long Day's Journey Into Night, I saw it with Michael Shannon and Jessica Lange on Broadway. I saw down here at the Court Theater, you know, weeks apart, I'm sitting there again for 4 hours or whatever it was. Probably somebody else will do it very shortly. This play, I'm like, I don't know this play. I read it in grad school, I think, but I really don't know it. And there's this fantastic poetry in it. Did you know the word hipster is in that play, 1964 or so? Hipster. And she goes, one of the characters in the play goes, there are no squares. Everybody is his own hipster.
Wow.
That is deep. See, I look at you, I think.
You think hipster.
I think he is his own hipster. That's what I think. That's what I think. And there's another.
I'm going to quote that. I'm going to use that. I'm my own hipster.
And there's another one where they go, I hope your ass doesn't hurt from sitting on the fence. That's a good one.
Why? Where is it? I mean, is the Goodman just smarter than everybody else in the sense that they're bringing it back? I mean, are they like, hey, we got this. We know this is a masterpiece. I mean, because it takes a little bit of guts to take a play that didn't do well when it first came out, or commercially people don't know about it, and put it on stage.
I don't think they knew what they had, frankly. I think that the director, Anne Kaufman, who's a New York-based director, sort of had, that was her project. She took it to them, and to their credit, they said, okay, you know, we like you. We trust you. And she put on that play. I don't think for a minute they thought that this play is as good as it actually has turned out to be, partly because she's given it a really good production. But it's a sort of a picture of the West Village at a moment when, I guess, it's right before everything, you know, caught fire. And it was still at a time when there were true bohemians in New York, which you go to the West Village now, and it's, you know, it's all the one percentery. But back then, of course, it was
really
not.
Cool skinny jeans.
Yeah, really cool.
Like, and, really expensive.
You know, the Magnolia Bakery and all the rest of it. But by then, it really wasn't that way. And it's just this fascinating. And at one point, one of the characters, actually the guy, Sidney Brustein, who's this sort of, he owns a, they used to have, Justin, a thing called Lefty Newspapers back then in print. And he owns one of these. And he says at one point, don't you realize everything's about to catch fire? Everything's about to catch fire. And I'm like, wow, she saw that coming in that, you know, before Martin Luther King. She saw it coming. She was a genius. It's an amazing play.
Well, Lorraine Hansberry.
Check it out, the good people of the Download. Check it out.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We got to talk 40th anniversary of Steppenwolf. I'd love to talk about this theater archive. And then also your Sunday stories, both the Obama story and then the one you got coming up. Chris Jones, Chicago Tribune. Stay with us. It's a Download here on WGN Radio. Chris Jones from the Chicago Tribune, chief theater critics with me now. We talked Lorraine Hansberry's birthday, so let's now talk about Steppenwolf's anniversary, 40th year.
40 years.
They're celebrating.
You know what? They've got a new bar. It's like a new bar. You know, everyone's opening the show, Justin. Right, I can never get excited about that, but a new bar?
A new bar. I think I've seen more pictures of that new bar. Every time I look, I'm like, oh, Steppenwolf's having another party. That's great.
I had a little tour, from their very handsome director of audience services on Saturday night. I think I called him the house manager briefly. He was very offended. He's like, I'm the director of audience. No, wait. The director of audience experience.
Oh, there you go.
I'm like, excuse me. Anyway, so he gave me, he's a very nice guy, gave me a great tour. It's not a very big... So it's a bar. It's basically just north of where Steppenwolf is. It's in the neck. Used to be...
So it's a different building?
Well, it's attached. It's a different building.
Okay.
It has a little door goes in. It used to be the Ethan Allen Furniture Store.
Oh, yeah, right.
For those of you listeners who've been around a while. And in there is a bar. And one of the little signatures is a little globe from O'Rourke's, which is the bar that used to be.
That was my next question. I was going to say, are they trying to recreate that experience? Because O'Rourke's was the basement bar across the street.
That's right.
That everyone, all the actors would go to. Great times in that place.
Right.
And it closed up, and I was like, well, where do they go now? So they're just deciding, you know what we need to invest in? Our own O'Rourke's.
So they've created their own O'Rourke's, that's right.
Wow.
But it's a little cool.
It's a great idea.
It's You know, it needs a little. O'Rourke's is a, it's not a, O'Rourke's had a bit of personality. This is a new, obviously, and you know, there's a lot of food. And frankly, I'm walking around the bar, I'm like, this is not very big, and there's really a few tables, and I think they're going into this whole thing quite cautiously, which you can understand, right? But as I'm walking around the bar, I'm thinking, they might get kind of mobbed here. I mean, a lot of people are going to want to have a drink at Steppenwolf.
Or they want after the show, they don't want to go home. They want to see if the actors are going to come to the bar. That's going to be the pressure on the actors, the big actors, the ensemble members.
Go to the bar, John Malkovich.
You got
to
go,
Not that you're ever in the show. Gary Sinise, go to the bar.
Gary Cole, you got to go. You got to go. That's just what we do. You got to go. We have a bar now. Yeah.
So that's all going to be a whole brave new world at Steppenwolf. Laurie Metcalf coming up she's in the show in about 3 weeks, so maybe she'll be in the bar.
I saw a big picture that was attached to your story with Rahm Emanuel giving a proclamation, and in the picture was Martha Levy, who's the former artistic director and executive director of that esteemed theater, who suffered a stroke probably a year ago,
almost exactly.
How is Martha? I love Martha Levy, and I think the whole theater world wants to know how she's doing.
Well, she, you know, there's nobody more popular among anyone in the creative professions in Chicago than Martha Levy. It was partly because she would always go and see everybody else's work, and that she treated them not as competitors or rivals, but she became a mentor to many, many people. She's not doing so bad. She was at the gala, and I saw her at the Steppenwolf gala on Saturday. She was smiling away. She was getting tributes. She was greeting everybody very warmly. I think, you know, she had a stroke, and I think it's a long road back, as anybody who's been in that situation well knows. But she's doing really well. And I think she's started to get out and about, which was not the case a few weeks or months ago. But now, you know, she's showing up at a few things. And it feels to me like Martha's kind of back, actually. And I think that's the coolest thing.
That's great news.
Because
she's a wonderful person.
Absolutely wonderful. And you know, I'm just glad she's back. That's all I can say. And I think people should feel good that she's in better health.
Okay, so the 40th anniversary of Steppenwolf, there was the big party on Saturday. Is that it?
Yes.
Are they going to string this along? Is this going to be like the entire 40th? Every week is the 40th anniversary?
And yes, another reminiscence from Terry Kinney and Gary Sinise, Jeff Perry. This is where, you know.
This is Jeff Perry's weekend.
My favorite, my favorite Steppenwolf truth is that if I had a dollar for everybody who has claimed to have been in that Highland Park basement, I'd be a very rich man. I would not have to come on your show.
What I like to say is, I say, when I was doing theater in that Highland Park church basement,
right.
It's a different one. It was not the same. Like it was just an Episcopalian church that nobody, it was just pretty much babysitting kids during service. That's what you have to do.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
No, so 40 years, it's a great theater. I mean, it's one of the, I think it's indispensable in our city. It's cooler than everywhere else. Let's just be frank. Let's tell it like it is.
Well, I mean,
it's a coolness quotient. It's interesting if you look at the people that support it. I don't know if you ever go to these gala type things ever, but I didn't actually go to this one. I stopped in after another review. That's a whole other story. But I stopped in because I saw the tent, and I'm like, well,
yeah, there's a
why
tent.
Not? There's a tent. So I who never know what stories may present themselves.
I will be back in one moment. I see a tent.
I see a tent.
So I'm Chris Jones. I love tents.
There's a cop on the door. He's like, yo, who are you? And I said, Chris Jones. And he's going, Joe. No, 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 no.
Some publicist runs off. Like,
exactly.
No, oh, Chris is here. Drops their drink.
So anyway, what I was about to say was, if you go to a lot of these very boring, very boring events and same people sometimes, and Steppenwolf does have, you know, you can see there's the traders are there at Steppenwolf, the kind of the young, wealthy people of Chicago who are globbing on to the coolness of the brand. And I don't think you really see that quite. You know, I was looking around going, look at that guy. You know, they're all, you know the type, right? And there were a lot of them at the Steppenwolf event. I was like,
A lot of wide knot ties.
A lot of wide knot ties. Also a lot of sort of those young men with beards.
Yeah, right.
With the big beard.
Big
not
beards.
The cool Justin
right.
beard. But the big beard.
Are you a venture capitalist or are you in the Decemberists? I can't tell. I can't tell.
I was in London actually about a few weeks ago with a couple, and I was with a couple old college friends of mine, and I got the train into the city of London, and we had dinner in a restaurant there. And this friend of mine, whose job is he deals in 80s vinyl, very alternative, couldn't be any more left wing. And we're sitting there, and he goes, "Look at these guys." And you see these guys in suits come by with these really long. He's like, "Look at these guys."
They put it together.
Put it together. And we had this geezer moment of like, God, the trader with a beard.
Those beards wouldn't work in our time. Someone needs a shave.
I mean,
we're
talking big beards and the suit. It's, you know, and it's like the Wall Street movie with a beard.
With a big beard. I love it. Chris Jones, my guest tonight. He's the chief theater critic at the Chicago Tribune. Let's take a break. We'll get the news. Let's talk about two things that everybody loves to talk about, Obama and Hamilton. Sound good?
Sounds good, man.
All right. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. Justin Kaufman, Patty Vasquez coming up at 11 o'clock. Chris Jones sticking around. I love it.
Oh, on the download.
Look at you. Chief theater critic at the Chicago Tribune. All right, let's first talk about this theater archive. I think this is the greatest idea ever. The concept of creating an archive for theater, for plays to live on.
Exactly. So there's one in New York at the New York Public Library, very famous. It's where you go if you're a director and you have no ideas. You go and you're like, how did they do it originally? And you watch it, and then you squeak down some notes, and you go back to Chicago and you direct the damn thing exactly the same way.
Sure.
That's the cynical view. However, the scholars can say you can go there and you can watch, you know, a play from 1992 exactly as it was seen. But Chicago's never had that. So if you think of all the very famous Chicago productions, your Malkovich, your Billy Peterson.
Are they essentially just cataloged or archived by the theater company?
Yes.
Like, so Steppenwolf has Second City has a room, Steppenwolf has a room.
There's some money to do it, and I think the idea is that there will be a public record of those productions. Now, many of the theaters archive their own shows, but this will be available theoretically to scholars or anyone who wants to look at what those shows actually
There are. Has been, I mean, the library has some theater background stuff.
It does.
I remember I was telling Pete right before the segment, and I can't remember the actor's name, and it's going to kill me. I'm going to wake up tonight and go, John. He had three names. But he died of AIDS in the 80s or 90s. He was a really, really great off-loop performer. And I went to the UIC library system, and I found a play he had done. And I think it was through UIC. And that's how I pulled audio for a story I was working on. But you're right. I mean, it was like, it was a needle in a haystack.
It's very
difficult
to find
it.
Yeah. And there are some great shows that there's no record of at all. Absolutely no record. Now, you know, a lot of people in theater go, well, it's an ephemeral art. You had to be there. Even if you put a camera in the back, you're not really recording it because it's a sort of bad. They're usually bad. But nonetheless, there's definite value to it. So I see that as a good thing.
Well, okay. Your piece last week was essentially a review of President Obama. The show President Obama.
The comedian.
I mean, but it really did sort of, you know, it was a thought piece about how funny this president has been.
Very funny.
It's very funny. And we were just talking earlier, we were shooting this around in the show, just about, I mean, there really hasn't been a huge track record of funny presidents. And President Obama kind of breaks the mold.
Absolutely. I mean, George W. Bush, not that funny. Bill Clinton, not really very funny. Nixon, no. First Bush? No. But Obama is genuinely funny, and I think a lot of this has come obviously in very late in his second term, where he's like, he's letting loose a little bit. He seems to me, and I was working on analyzing why is he very funny. Now, I mean, firstly, he has very good writers. And the other thing is, you know, this is an age, as you know, of video clips. Mm-hmm. So if you look at that speech, that very funny speech he gave at the Correspondents' Dinner, right. Nobody used to watch that.
Right.
Now everybody, that had like 5 billion views on YouTube, right? And there's a lot of stuff in that that is really, really funny. You know, this is great. This is any number of things in it. And I think he's got great timing. He's sort of droll. He doesn't take himself too seriously. He's actually a pretty funny comic.
He's really good off the cuff too. Like, you see him in situations where he's dealing with reporters, and you know, if he has to call somebody out or he makes a mistake, yes. He's pretty good at sort of getting that one liner in. But what I liked about the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which I've had friends who've been writing for it,
right.
You know, and it's amazing
right.
how many people, and you only see the clips.
Right.
This, for whatever reason, I was on my couch and it came on live on CNN, and I watched the whole thing. And it was the first time, I think, from
it was
front
long.
To
he
end.
Was he did yeah. a long, as they say in stand up, he did a long set.
It was
he did
yeah,
45
I mean,
minutes.
It was right. a it was joke after joke after joke.
Right.
Now, I will say that, you know, 10-20% of that was maybe
yes.
it kind of hit
right.
and you're like, I don't really care who he's making fun of. So, but it was fun to watch him set up and knock down joke after joke, like as the president, to watch him sort of, you know, in different ways sort of deliver that joke.
Which, you know, made the professional comedian of the night somewhat redundant.
Yeah, right.
It's like, hi, you got to follow the president, who's pretty funny. Good luck. And that didn't go down so well.
It did not.
You know, I mean, it's like, wow, this is really not a good gig anymore.
And I wonder how much we play into that, and like the idea that he's done so much in the social media realm, or this sort of new the ability to see him in cameos. We see him on late night television more than any other president. I mean, he
yes.
does Jimmy Fallon Slow Jam the News,
right?
Or he does Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis.
Oh, he did. You know, he was with Hamilton. He was with Lin-Manuel, rapping with Lin-Manuel Miranda. I mean, he's done. It's clearly somebody on his staff goes, you know, this is how you reach people. You know, I was listening the other day, and they're like, as President Obama said to BuzzFeed the other day. And there was a hilarious Second City sketch from about, this is about a year ago, where they took a serious journalist from a paper like the Tribune, and they said, hey, you're not working for BuzzFeed. And the guy and the journalist would go, oh, I want to write this story about poverty. And they go, okay, we're going to BuzzFeed that. 10 great things about being poor. And the guy would be like, no. And it's a hilarious sketch, hilarious, just, you know, about BuzzFeed. And then they got presidential interviews.
Yeah, they do. I mean, that's that.
They have the last laugh.
I mean, they had on one of the excruciating sort of in and out of the White House Correspondents' special on CNN, they had like a panel.
Yes.
There's some interesting people on there, but it was just like, it was trying to do like fashion police to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And one of the guys was like, that was his job. Like, part of his job was, he was former audience
yes.
coordinator for the White House. But his job was to set up the BuzzFeeds, or to, you know, do the 30-second video for, you know, Facebook, whatever it was. But so you could tell, I mean, he's a young guy, had fancy,
right.
really crazy socks on. Really, I mean, you could tell he was
They've
creative.
Hired a lot of these people there at the White House, I
well,
think. So all right. of a sudden, he's everywhere.
So let's talk about your column coming up for Sunday.
Sunday.
Yeah, tell us about it.
It's about Hamilton, because you know what? Every time I write about Hamilton, do you know how many people click on those columns? Do you have any idea?
Really?
Any idea the multiples?
They're Hamilton crazy for any kind of Hamilton media.
I like to say it is the Donald Trump of arts journalism, Justin. You just write about Hamilton and you are home free. Home free.
What are you writing about?
Well, I got to think of another angle every time, haven't you? Every time. Well, this one, it is actually a fascinating story. So this one, Hamilton, of course, as you well know, is coming to Chicago in September for about 18 months is what they're thinking. And then it's going to go to Washington, where, of course, all the political class can't wait for it to arrive.
Right.
So the Kennedy Center doesn't quite know when it's going to arrive, because they don't know how many tickets they're going to sell in Chicago. So they've actually said to people, We want you to buy 2 years worth of theater tickets to get your Hamilton tickets.
What?
So they're going to buy this season, like 10 shows, and then the next season, like another 10.
So they're
10.
Bundling it almost
bundling
like a, subscription series.
It's a little bit like Comcast, where you want your one sports channel, and they're like, you've got to buy 297 channels. And you say, can I just not? And they're like, no.
I just want ESPN
Just
Classic.
ESPN. No, you can't do that. You've got to buy all 300.
That's unprecedented. I mean, it's to say,
oh, yes, indeed. Unprecedented.
How are people responding to it? I mean, I mean, it's too early in the game, but will subscribers go for that kind of thing?
Well, it's a fascinating question. I mean, the thing is that the single tickets for Hamilton run to such ridiculous prices, your $1,000, your $1,200. You can buy entire seasons for less than that.
Oh, yeah.
So the smart dude is like, well, I can give the rest of them away, or I can just not show. Right.
Or I was going to go to some of them anyway.
Yeah,
right?
maybe. Unlikely, but maybe.
And so the theaters, is the theater getting wise to that? Would they jack up their 2 year season?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. I think it is so interesting in show business is that in most fields people compete. These are shows to different producers who are all benefiting from the success of Hamilton. It's sort of fascinating. I mean, if you're in sort of economic theory, which I love the economics of show business, and it's like that thing is going to make billions of dollars. And what sort of fascinates me, and this was occurring to me as I was writing this piece, actually, what fascinates me is that most of the entertainment that we watch is controlled by three or four very large corporations, mm-hmm. not Hamilton. Here you have the most successful, I think, probably the most profitably successful entertainment enterprise of the recent moment. And it's one guy, it's a couple of guys, really, a few investors, okay, but not a corporation, not a public company.
That's interesting.
So it's very interesting, and it's like it's bigger than anything
right.
that
it's
those
not
guys.
Warner Brothers, it's not.
No,
yeah,
not
it's
Disney.
Not Viacom,
they
right.
can't get it. Yeah, they must
Do they
good.
Want it? Are they seeing it and going, we're going to make
oh,
a
I'm sure they are.
Theme park out of it?
Well, they've got to make a deal then, haven't they? With the, they got to right. make a deal if we have. That's it. God, no one has thought of that yet.
Actors and creators and the investors, do they see Hamilton as a work of art where they're behind, like this is their project and this is their baby, or are they just a small sort of corporation that's looking to at some point we will sell this to Disney for all of the Star Wars?
That's a great question. I think the difficulty in the live arts is scalability. So if you're let's take say Uber. If you're Uber, you're like, wow, that went really well in New York. We'll let people get Uber in Chicago. And all you do is you hit a button, you hire 3 techies, and away you go, and you're in another market.
Yeah, right.
And in a movie, you just print a few more movies, or you Netflix, you hit another button. In theater, it's much harder because you've got to build all these companies of Hamilton. Now you can do that, lots of talented people, but it takes time. And the other thing is they've got to be as good as the original. Otherwise, people start going, oh,
right.
Hamilton.
What are the options? I mean, you can option that to a film, and you can do sort of what
right.
they did with
I'm sure they will do that eventually.
Yeah, Into the Woods kind of
right.
stuff, right?
But they don't want to do that right now because they're making so much money.
Right.
They don't want
right.
to give it away
right.
to a
right.
movie.
Absolutely.
They're like, oh, we'll talk about that in 2021. So, that's – but it's not easily scalable, as they say. So the question will be how many companies can they build? And what fascinates me is – can they all be as good as the original company?
Yeah, it's so
difficult.
Interesting to think about it
yes.
that way, that they are an independent. They're like an indie rock band.
They're an indie rock band.
Yeah,
they just hit it really big.
Yeah,
they blew up.
Yeah, they're like Chance the Rapper.
That's right.
right.
Who's doing all kinds of
right.
stuff.
But that's sort of the same kind of storyline. For them, going to Chicago, going to D.C., and then everywhere else where they're going to go, at a certain point will – when does the craze die down?
Well, that's the question that nobody knows. How long will it go, and how crazy will it stay?
Are there any other contemporaries? I mean, Book of Mormon did well, but nothing like this, right?
But it's different somehow because Book of Mormon is a sort of a pastiche. I would say it's a satire. It's a fun show. It's a laugh. It's not for kids, which Hamilton a lot of people take kids to. Book of Mormon is absolutely not for kids. It's not for anybody who can't stand South Park. It is what it is. It's a defined sector of the market. Very good for that kind of audience, but it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you're not going to see Obama hanging out at the Book of Mormon. You're just not, because it doesn't serve his purpose. Oh, Hamilton, everybody's all over Hamilton, right? The president, politicians. It's made politicians, it's made these government treasury wonks look cool. That's the thing he's done. He's made them all look cool, and they can't, and they just can't. They're all dying for tickets. And like in Washington, they're like, "Why is it in Chicago? We're Washington. It's Washington. Why is it not
Alexander
here?
Alexander Hamilton.
This is this exactly.
This is our guy.
This is our guy."
That'd be like if there was a Dicka play.
Exactly.
And it was like DC got it first. You're like,
exactly.
What is that?
It always, you know, I love it when we get stuff like this. The other one that really annoyed another city was the Gloria Estefan show and the Miami.
Yeah, Miami. Went
Miami
crazy.
Was like, "What's this?
What's
well,
this?
What are you doing?"
When they do the story of Styx, the band Styx.
That's right.
And we're like, "How is it not in Chicago?
It'd be in
Des
Moines,
San Antonio to start." All right, Chris Jones, all chief theater critic, and you can check out his column on Hamilton on Sunday in the Chicago Tribune.
We appreciate Chris, all your clicks.
It's so great to see you. Thanks for being here, man.
Bye-bye.
A good show tonight. We got to get the Doogie Howser music. What did we learn?
I was just... we do a live blog here.
Yeah.
So if you're like on WGNradio.com, you can follow along.
Okay. We should be saying that every single night. Pete puts a live blog together, takes pictures, there's video, there's everything that's on the show, what was said on the show. And Pete does it all while he produces the
show. A
lot
of the texts.
That's ridiculous.
We get a lot of texts that come in that are really fun that we don't really get to.
So you put it up at 7 o'clock. And it just kind of refreshes itself.
Yeah.
You just do it. You just keep refreshing it. So 7 o'clock, WGNradio.com. It's on the front page?
Yep.
That's awesome.
But then I was like recapping the show. I'm like, we had education. We had music. We had art.
Mm-hmm.
We had theater. We had trivia.
Yeah, right.
Is that it? Comedy, always. News, sports.
No, that's not that
and
impressive.
A pregnant pause.
And Rob Martyr was there for a little bit, too.
Well, it's hilarious. It's good to be here.
That's it? That's all that was on the show?
Yeah. Hey, I follow so along up after. Here in the newsroom.
Yeah. Doesn't sound so great now.
Try again tomorrow.
We'll try again tomorrow. Scott Carter on tomorrow. The executive he's the executive producer of Real Time with Bill Maher. And he's got a show here at Northlight. And he wrote a play. He's been working on his play for like 30 years. He finally is staging it. It's at the Northlight. We'll talk to him tomorrow about Bill Maher. I read this that he has produced over 1,200 episodes because he was the original producer of and writer of Politically Incorrect on Comedy Central. So he did all of those shows, which was like 7 years or whatever, then moved to CBS, and then he's done all the Real Time with Bill Maher. So he's
Jeez, that's a lot.
Like 1,200 episodes of TV with Bill Maher. You think your life is tough. That sounds like it'd be tough. Hey, man. Like, imagine the mood swings. Get out of my office, man. So that's, I'm looking forward to that. That'll be fun. And tomorrow's a frying pan. Steve Gadlin will be there. He's excited. He texted me today. He's like, I want to share my idea with Rob Martyr first. And I said, well, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I'm tougher on him than any of the callers or texters. That's
he
for sure.
Really has developed like a relationship. Like you're his dad. He's like, what is? But I don't care what these texters think. What does Martyr think?
I love him, but I'm tough on him. I want him to succeed.
Right.
He needs it.
That's why he's here.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that's fair. Just he's just his puppy dog eyes looking up into the screen. What's dad think? All right, Patty's coming up next. Stay with us. Another one in the books. Coming up, Patty Vasquez. Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.